All right, let's see here. Sound off 657. Sound off 656. Ah, here we go. Sound off 655. All right, let's play this. What are your thoughts on Tammy Sitch's tweets and outbursts on social media this week? I don't have anything to say about her tweets. Look, her words speak for themselves. I'm sure in a few weeks, there's going to be another Tammy Sitch arrest that I'm going to have to report on here on the podcast. Outside of that, she is a disgusting human being who does not deserve attention. That's my thoughts on Tammy Sitch.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman.
What is with this company's obsession with ninjas?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and threaten me.
Too many ninjas.
It's not hot.
You haven't been beat up properly.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce? Woo!
5 weeks. Took all of 5 weeks, as I predicted just last month, for Tammy Sitch to land right back in jail. She was arrested for operating a motor vehicle during a second license suspension, eluding a police officer, which is never a good thing, and violation of a domestic violence restraining order. So that's quite the list of charges there. The state of Pennsylvania filed a motion on Tuesday to revoke her parole following her arrest on Monday, parole that she was granted only a few months ago after spending nearly a year in prison, and that was after her parole was revoked once before for violating the terms of her plea deal. As far as I know, I think she's still incarcerated, I believe. Tonight is Extreme Rules, but the real horror show is Tammy Sitch. And I can only hope that she just doesn't hurt anybody else. That's all I hope for at this point. Through all of her shenanigans and all of her nonsense, she is just a lost cause. I just hope she doesn't cause harm to anybody else in the process. This is episode 661 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, July 19, 2020. I am the Solid Monster. Show some support for our sponsor, Audible, and get one free audiobook of your choice for free on me. Just sign up for a 30-day trial of the service at audibletrial.com/solidmonster. You know, they were the very first sponsor I ever had here on the show. That's true. That is true, and they have stuck with this show for over 6 years now. Episode 309 was the very first time I plugged Audible here on this podcast, and we're up to episode 661 now. And people are still, after all these years, cashing in on their free books. So many people have gotten a free book because of this trial. Some people have stuck with it. And they're paying Audible members every month. Some people got their one book and they went home. But I want to thank everybody who has taken advantage of it. Again, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. And you guys have been showing your support for this show through PayPal since episode 267. That was when I first added that little PayPal button to the right-hand side of the page on the solidmonster.com way back in 2013. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. As always, showing love to the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, who I believe was the very first person to ever donate to this show. He was number one. Now he's one of our mods in the Facebook groups. A shout out to Yvonne. Killshot, Keith Hart. Jerome, you're going down, Eugenio. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. Steven Handyman, Halistic. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. Josh the Shooter, Stockton. DeVenom, John Eru. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep. Dark Sky, Dixon Krasinski. New York Punk, Arnold Modesto. Ostentatious, Alan Carter. Stephen Foulmouth Fowler, John Raging Mad Riffle, The Cleveland Killer Tyrell Jackson, Mean Matt Forbush, and Cocky Chris Damara. And hey, Farah, thank you for buying a shirt from our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. I appreciate that. And Trek BR, who's been listening for 6 years, dropping 5 stars on iTunes. So we got a lot to get into here on this show. No, I am not talking about the Joey Ryan video. I know some people were waiting with bated breath. What's he going to say about the Joey Ryan video? I got through about 6 minutes of it, which was 6 minutes too much. It creeped me out too much. I did not watch the entire thing. I was not spending my Saturday night when I was still prepping for this show watching a 58-minute video from Joey Ryan. So perhaps once I have a chance to get through a little bit more of what he had to say, perhaps I'll have thoughts on it later in the week. But no, we are not talking about that this week. We are going to talk about Extreme Rules very quickly here at the top of the show. I am going to talk a little bit about Slammiversary, more so about the Talkin' Shop podcast that dropped with Anderson and Gallows, two of the newest signees to Impact Wrestling. A very newsworthy, very interesting interview. I'm going to break that whole thing down for you. And then a whole bunch of other news and notes. Bret Hart rates himself versus Hulk Hogan. We got a lot to get into here. But first, WWE presents its Extreme Rules horror show tonight. I did a predictions live stream on Thursday on YouTube. There's been a couple of changes since then. So I'm going to ram through these predictions for you quickly in case you missed it. They had teased a tables match at the end of SmackDown last week with Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura challenging New Day for the tag team titles. Seemed pretty obvious given how that went down last week. They put them through a table. Obviously, it's Extreme Rules. It's going to be a tables match. These announcers, though, Michael Cole and Corey Graves, are some of the dumbest people on the face of the earth. So they're forced to feign ignorance. Oh, I wonder what the stipulation is going to be. Yeah, gee, I wonder. How long has Michael Cole worked for this company for, huh? Over 20 years? He still hasn't figured out. Why do they make their announcers seem like a bunch of dumbasses? Why do they do that? Was there anybody who was still wondering what the stipulation would be, like, in the minutes before they actually announced it this week on TV? Why must they make their announcers look like just a bunch of dolts? Like the dumbest people in the entire company? I don't get it. But I picked the New Day to retain, if that match was to happen. And then on SmackDown Friday night, Cesaro had a pretty good match with Big E. He beat him. And then he and Nakamura picked the table match stip for their match tonight. What a surprise. So my prediction remains the same. I think New Day retains. We've got a bar fight. Now, the bar fight is not taking place tonight, I don't believe. There was supposed to be a bar fight between Jeff Hardy and Sheamus. And it looks as if it has been pushed back to SmackDown this Friday night. Now, I have not checked the Extreme Rules page today yet on WWE.com. I don't know if they're still listing it for tonight, but you know, Sheamus gave him a bro kick in the back on Friday night, told him he would see him next week on SmackDown, so that sounds like it has been bumped. Kind of like Randy Orton and Big Show, non-sanctioned match. They're not doing it tonight. They're saving it for the Monday Night Raw episode tomorrow night, so I guess this is their way of just trying to get the ratings up. You know, you promote some big gimmick match and save it for TV. I assume that's what they're doing here. Now, Jeff had been scheduled to appear in court Thursday morning, stemming from his DWI arrest last October. It has been delayed due to the pandemic now until September 28th. And my guess is it may be delayed yet again. But if it isn't, it's going to be almost one full year to the day when he does appear in court this fall since that last arrest. So what happens here? What happens here, Jeff Hardy and Sheamus, what happens here, whether it happens tonight or whether it happens on Friday, I had picked Jeff to win. I'm still sticking with that prediction. I think he gets his revenge. Let's be done with this feud, please. He gets his revenge. He'll force Sheamus to drink something from the bar. Sheamus will vomit. Vince McMahon will laugh. And hopefully we can all move beyond this. Apollo Crews defends the United States Championship against MVP. We have not seen Apollo on TV in a few weeks. I guess he's been selling the injuries from the full Nelson at the hands of Bobby Lashley a few weeks ago. This should be a win for Apollo Crews. You know, keep Apollo Crews strong for an eventual title defense against Lashley. Because if the match with MVP is not building to a match with Lashley, then what the hell are we even doing here? Bayley defends her SmackDown Women's Championship against Nikki Cross. You know, the way Nikki Cross has been screwed over by Bayley and pinned a couple times over the last few weeks has me rethinking my prediction of a Bayley win here on this show. You know, look, maybe their thinking is that there is something that happens tonight involving Bayley and Sasha. There's a backfiring. It cost Bayley the belt. Maybe they think Bayley and Sasha doesn't need a championship when they eventually have their match. I disagree. I would not take this title off of Bayley, but I don't know. Given the booking the last few weeks, you would think Nikki Cross is due for a win. I'm no longer as convinced of a Bayley victory tonight, but I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm predicting and hoping for a Bayley win, and the story with Sasha will eventually lead to a championship match between the two of them. And I think that she retains with an assist from Sasha, which is going to play into this next match here. Sasha Banks is challenging for a championship herself on this pay-per-view. She is challenging Asuka for the Raw Women's title. Very much looking forward to this match. And again, I said this on Thursday, I kind of like this idea. Here's how I see this going down. Sasha provides the assist for Bayley in her match earlier in the show, and it works. Bayley retains yet again. She squeaks by. Sasha expects her friend to be there for her during her match, and she is, but it backfires. It blows up in their face. Asuka retains the Raw Women's Championship, and that's what really begins the build to the eventual battle between Sasha and Bayley. And you know, you cost me the Raw Women's title. You know what? I want your title. The story is very simple. The setup for that match is very simple. You have the little issue of what do you do with the tag team titles, but you know, they drop them. They drop them on TV to somebody between now and SummerSlam. Maybe it would have been Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott had Liv Morgan been able to come back. Maybe Liv Morgan will be back on TV this week. I'll talk about Ruby and Liv and Bianca and all them when I get to my Raw thoughts a little bit later on. We have Eye for an Eye, Rey Mysterio against Seth Rollins. The only way to win this match is to extract your opponent's eye in order to win. This is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. We'll see how they execute it tonight. There is said to be CGI effects in the works for the eye extraction in this match. Somebody said to me, I think he emailed or tweeted me something about Tom Savino. You know, Tom Savino was brought in to help create the Fiend's mask, and he's just the greatest, probably, effects artist, makeup effects artist, horror effects artist that's ever lived. Maybe they'll bring in Tom Savini or somebody like that to assist with the effects. You know what? If you're going to do it, I would hope they do something like that, but that doesn't change the fact that this is really fucking dumb. Plain and simple. You will not convince me otherwise. This is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. Mysterio is, there's a lot of talk about his contract status. He has no contract at the moment. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? His son works for the company. If he wants to team with his son, I don't think he's going anywhere yet. I still think that there's going to be a tag team match at some point. He and Dominic teaming up, maybe against Rollins and Murphy, maybe SummerSlam. Eyeball or not, he could always wear a freaking eye patch. I still, regardless of his contract status, I'm picking Seth Rollins to win this match. I think Rollins is due for a win. He's lost a couple times on TV. And so, especially if Ray still might leave, I think if anybody's going to get their eyeball popped out, it's going to be him. It's going to be him. So I'm picking Rollins for the win here. Braun Strowman takes on Bray Wyatt Classic, non-title swamp fight. This was filmed on Thursday. Apparently, it was a long shoot. It's all we ever hear about with these things, right? We heard that for the Boneyard match. It was a long shoot. Long overnight shoot. We heard that with the Stadium Stampede that AEW did. They were up until like 5 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's kind of crazy, the length of these shoots, but they filmed it. It's all taped. It's all ready to go. They hired a stunt coordinator to help them with the whole thing. Bray has reverted for this one match, I assume, to his old persona. And I'm looking forward to this. I actually think that this gimmick works, you know, for these two in this environment, and it gets them out of the PC. So I don't mind this, like I mind that stupid eyeball nonsense. But I'm going to predict a Braun Strowman win. Be easy to predict a Bray Wyatt win because Braun won the first one, so now Bray has to win. No, he doesn't. For me, the story just works better if Braun wins because, you know, Funhouse Bray couldn't do it. He couldn't get the job done. The old Bray Wyatt, in the swamp, still can't get the job done. What's it going to take to get the job done? It's going to take the Fiend. And I would love to see Braun get the win, and then the Fiend emerges from the swamp and drags him down into it. And this all leads to a championship, a third match, a championship match with the Fiend. The one persona that he's got to go to try to get the job done. But I think in order for that story to work, I don't know, I feel like you could have the Fiend show up. I mean, look, it's a taped match. You can have all three faces of Bray lined up next to each other if you want, right? Special effects, post-production, it's amazing the things that you can do. But I just think it works better if none of them can beat Braun. The only one who can be brought in to beat Braun is the Fiend. If Bray wins tonight, it kind of kills that story because he's already won. You know, like, what do you need the Fiend for? What do you really need the Fiend for? So I'm picking Bray to win, and then we'll get our Fiend reappearance. And I had floated this idea on the stream on Thursday as far as, you know, let's say he goes on to SummerSlam. Let's say he goes on to regain the Universal Championship. He gets the belt back. And then what do you do? Like, who's his first challenger coming out of that? And I floated Jeff Hardy's name because we haven't seen Jeff and Bray, and that could be kind of a new program. I don't need to see more of this rehashing of Jeff's, you know, past as an alcoholic and all this other nonsense. But if not Jeff Hardy, I floated the name Finn Balor because Balor has been on the NXT roster now for almost a year. The last time we saw him on WWE television, he was being squashed at SummerSlam almost a year ago to the day by The Fiend. And he never got his revenge. We never got Fiend against the Demon. And I think that's something you can build to even a Survivor Series match. I'm not saying blow it off right away, but, you know, build to something like that at Survivor Series in November. So I would definitely consider that. I would keep my eye on that idea as far as Finn Balor could be coming back, because to me, he's done all he can do, really, on the NXT brand. He's been there a while. He's been there longer than I thought he would be there for. He's had a lot of matches. He's had championship matches. He's faced all the big names, some not-so-big names. You know, Damian Priest, Cameron Grimes, people like that. I feel like it's time for him to make his way back. SmackDown could use another babyface, and I think Finn Balor could be that guy. And we have Drew McIntyre defending the WWE Championship against Dolph Ziggler. The same Dolph Ziggler who I saw got a big endorsement from The Rock on Instagram this week. Ziggler will not reveal the stipulation that he has chosen for this match until bell time. There was some kind of a leak, a potential spoiler leak for the stipulation on a Facebook ad earlier in the week, saying that it would be a TLC match, which only makes sense if they're just not doing a TLC pay-per-view this year. Is it a TLC match? Is it something like what I was thinking, which is that he bars Drew from using the Claymore, and so he can't use his big finishing move, but of course in the end he'll find some other way to win. I've heard some other wacky rumors I'm not even going to mention because I don't even think there's any legitimacy to them, but they're pretty far out there. So we'll see. I don't think there is a single person who is going to buy this pay-per-view or sub to the network because, man, I got to know what that stipulation is that Dolph Ziggler picked. I don't know why they didn't just announce it, you know, on Monday, but I guess in storyline, he wants to keep Drew on his toes. He wants to keep him waiting and wondering. If it were me, I would force him to tie both hands behind his back and blindfold him. If I wanted to win the championship, right? If I had the chance to pick the stip, I mean, my God, of all the things I could do, right? You could lose the title by DQ, both hands tied behind the back, blindfolded, stick little cotton balls in his ear so he can't hear anything. He can't hear the footsteps behind you. These guys are idiots. They'll be like, I choose a ladder match. I choose a TLC match. You moron. No wonder he's not going to win the title. But these two should have a good match. I absolutely would not change the championship, but they should have a very good match together. Now, on the live stream tonight, I am going live on YouTube as soon as the pay-per-view ends. Whether it's 10 o'clock, 9:45, 10:30, whatever time it is, I want you to come on over. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off on YouTube, and within 5 minutes of the pay-per-view going off the air, I will be live on YouTube. And not only will I be recapping the entire event and giving you my thoughts on Eye for an Eye and the Swamp Fight and all that good stuff, but no other podcast, no other stream is going to be doing this tonight. I have the distinction of giving away 6 replica championship belts. And all you have to do to enter this contest, it costs you a buck. You have until 7 o'clock tonight, Eastern, so there's still time. Go to WrestleRumble.com. It's $1 per entry. You can enter as many times as you want. We're giving away 6 belts in total to 3 different winners. So, third place winner is getting a Smoking Skull replica belt. Second place winner is getting the classic WWF title and Winged Eagle Classic replica. And the first place winner is getting 3 belts. The classic WCW United States Championship, the classic WWE United States Championship, and the IWGP United States Championship. So it would be kind of funny if we end up having an international grand prize first place winner who's not even from the U.S., and then this person wins 3 United States Championship belts. I got comments from people saying, man, I hope I come in second because they want the Winged Eagle. You got a lot of options. You only have one way to find out who the winners are. I'll be picking them live at random on the stream tonight, so hopefully you guys will tune in, and good luck if you are entered, if you've paid your dollar for your entry. I wish you the best of luck. I hope you walk away with the belt. Wrestle Rumble's going to be shipping those bad boys out the very next day, tomorrow, in fact, via FedEx to all of the winners. Per WrestleVotes on Twitter, WWE is still very much planning to host WrestleMania 37 as a stadium show in Los Angeles next year, but they do not want the final decision to linger until the very last minute. They're hoping for a decision by mid-December from the state of California as far as large-scale gatherings in the state so that they can plan accordingly. So we should know before this year is out whether or not WrestleMania will be taking place at that new SoFi Stadium in L.A. I give it a 0% chance of happening, but we'll wait until December and we'll see. That does not bode well for WrestleMania in L.A. next year. Look, the city of Philadelphia, I don't know how many of you saw this, the city of Philadelphia this week banned all gatherings of more than 50 people and all public events that would feature crowds all the way through at least February of next year. And Pennsylvania is in far better shape than the state of California is at the moment. California just had to reverse course and shut down businesses all over again, which was inevitable because when, you know, people don't listen to the, you know, rules they put in place or whatever, what ends up happening? They go right back to these lockdowns. And you're going to see this in a lot of other places too. So California is going through that right now. I don't see WrestleMania next year anywhere but the Performance Center. And I hate saying that because WrestleMania at the Performance Center sucks. But that's what I see. The bigger question, I haven't heard anybody talking about this, I wonder, is what's going to happen with the Royal Rumble? Would they just do the Royal Rumble at the PC? Or would they not do a Royal Rumble at all? I can't see them just not doing a Rumble. But I don't know. I haven't heard a peep from anybody about... Everyone's talking about WrestleMania, but no one's talking about the Royal Rumble, which is one of my favorite events of the year. I actually thought this year's Royal Rumble, the men's Rumble, was excellent. You know, we've had some real stinkers in recent years. I very much enjoyed the one this year they were in Houston, I think, right? At the baseball stadium. Some nice surprises. I loved what they did with Brock Lesnar in that match and some big returns. Edge coming back, the big pop for Edge. So it would suck to not do the Rumble at all, but whether they do the Rumble, you know, at the PC or some other empty building, it ain't going to be the same, right? It ain't going to be the same. But maybe we'll have all the NXT trainees, you know, counting down. They could put the countdown clock on and they can pretend that they're the live audience and they can count down like the fans usually count down. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Impact Wrestling held its Slammiversary pay-per-view last night from an empty building in Nashville, and as expected, we saw some new faces, and we saw some old ones as well. The Motor City Machine Guns, they returned. Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley. I know Sabin has had a rough go at it over the years. I think both of his knees have basically exploded. He's had ACL surgeries, a lot of injury woes for Chris Sabin, so it was good to see him back. They came back with a win over the Rascals. Moose retained his TNA World Heavyweight title over Tommy Dreamer. I don't know why Tommy Dreamer is wrestling for a world title, even if it's not the world title. I don't know why he's wrestling for a world title on pay-per-view in 2020, but here we are. And I don't ever want to hear another Impact fan bitch and moan about somebody still calling it TNA. If they have somebody, I don't care if it's some, it's just a storyline that Moose is doing. I don't care what it is. You still have a championship on this show that is recognized as the TNA world title. You have a TNA champion on your show. I don't want to hear it because a lot of people still call it TNA. It will always be TNA. You can't wash that stink off. Now they have an actual person carrying the old TNA world title around, and they get very upset when people call it TNA. Oh, it's not TNA, it's Impact. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Kylie Rae won a women's gauntlet match that was not very good at all, and yes, I did see it. Heath Slater showed up, now just going by Heath. Fresh off his Raw appearance last week, he walked down to the ring. He said that he was planning to challenge the Rascals, I guess like an open challenge. He was going to accept it, but didn't make it in time. He said there was a vacant spot in the Impact World title match in the main event. He wanted in. Somebody I'm not familiar with came out and interrupted him. This guy, Rohit. He attacked Heath. Heath reversed it, took him out instead. Later on in the show, Slater was hanging out backstage with his boy Rhino. Heath Slater and Rhino reunited, calling himself the hottest free agent in wrestling. That's what Heath Slater was calling himself, the hottest free agent in wrestling. If he's the hottest free agent in wrestling, well, then I guess there aren't that many free agents in wrestling right now. I mean, I like Heath, but come on. Come on now. That'd be like saying Eric Young was the hottest free agent in wrestling. Okay, sure. Doesn't speak very well for the state of wrestling and the state of free agency. If those are the hottest free agents in wrestling. Scott D'Amore showed up. He told him that, you know, with the pandemic and all, social distancing, you can't be here. You gotta leave. And Rhino said, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Told Heath to show up at TV on Tuesday. Chris Bay won the X Division Championship from Willie Mack. We had Ethan Page and Josh Alexander, the North, one of the more talked about teams, certainly an Impact, and I hear their name mentioned a lot, actually. Very good team. They retained their Impact Tag Team titles over the reluctant team, reluctant partners, Sammy Callahan and Ken Shamrock. Man, did Shamrock age. Holy shit. He's still in great shape, but I had to look it up. I was very curious. Ken Shamrock is 56 years old. I didn't realize he was that old. He looks even older, at least facially. But the Motor City Machine Guns came out after, so they were unsuccessful. The Motor City Machine Guns came out after the match. They challenged the North, and they are going to be taping that match for the titles on Tuesday, at TV on Tuesday. So that sounds like it could be some fun. Deonna Purrazzo won the Knockouts title off of Jordynne Grace, working over her arm the entire match. She had both of Jordynne Grace's arms basically trapped behind her, and she was wrenching back. It was like a double Fujiwara armbar. Looked very painful. She couldn't even tap. Right? Both of her arms were caught behind her, so she actually had to verbally submit. That's old school. We don't see that a lot these days. When I grew up watching wrestling, it was all like, you know, the referee would get down and you would shake your head or you would whatever, you could cry uncle. You would have to verbally submit. You would have to speak the words. I give up. I quit. Now, it's all about tapping. You know who I blame for that? Ken Shamrock. Because that didn't start in WWE, at least. That didn't start until Ken Shamrock came in 1997, and then all of a sudden, everything went from verbal submissions to tapouts. He's the one, at least in that company. He's the one that deserves to be credited for that. But Deonna Purrazzo is the new champion, probably the best thing on the whole show. It's nice to see Deonna actually treated like something more than just a warm body to get other people over, which is all she ever was in WWE and all she ever was in NXT. And with Tessa Blanchard stripped of her Impact World title and fired, Michael Elgin was suspended, and basically he's gone as well now. They had an opening here in the main event, what was supposed to be a fatal four-way. They had Trey Miguel, Ace Austin, and Eddie Edwards, and that fourth spot was filled by the returning Rich Swann. Back on Impact TV after 6 or 7 months on the shelf with a broken ankle. And then, after he made his entrance, out came a fifth entrant. So it turned from a fatal four-way into a five-way, and that fifth and final entrant turned out to be the returning Eric Young, returning home where he made a name for himself in TNA. And, I guess the lesson here, from Rich Swann coming out to Eric Young coming out, I suppose that the lesson here is it's not hard to get a world title match in Impact Wrestling if you just show up at the right moment. Heath Slater screwed it all up. He should have walked out during the main event. What the hell was he walking out earlier in the show for, talking about wanting to be in the main event? Had he just walked out here, he would have had a world championship match. He walked out too early. He's an idiot. But in the end, Eddie Edwards pins Ace Austin to win his second Impact World title. Saw Madman Fulton, another former WWE face there. Remember, he was in Sanity for a quick second until he got hurt. And then he lost his spot. Poor guy lost his spot to Killian Dane. But he attacked Eddie Edwards after the match until the Good Brothers showed up to make the save. Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, they have signed a 2-year deal with Impact Wrestling. Gallows, as they're walking down, and they're not running, they're not sprinting, they're not sliding into the ring, they're taking their time. They're walking very gingerly down to the ring, and still, Luke Gallows slips. It was very quick. If you blink, you could have missed it, but he slipped. And he almost fell on his ass, but he covered for it pretty well. I still thought it was funny. I mean, the guy was moving at a snail's pace, and yet he still slipped. Edwards took out Fulton. These two hit the magic killer on Ace Austin. They had a little beer bash celebration together. And as they're going off the air, Eddie Edwards is celebrating his big world title win. As they're going off the air, they cut to a video. The screen goes black and they cut to a video tease. This guy is got his back turned and then he turns and we see that it is EC3. The only surprise in seeing EC3 here is that he didn't show up and win the world title. Instead, they opted to tease a cliffhanger as they went off the air, which is smart. Which is smart because, you know, Impact has no buzz. And it's kind of sad. The only buzz that Impact had, and I don't blame them for doing this, but the only reason that there was any sort of buzz or excitement amongst people who maybe are just casual fans going into Slammiversary. I mean, look, the diehard Impact fans were looking forward to Slammiversary. Everybody else couldn't give two shits about Slammiversary until they started teasing, oh, this guy might show up, and this guy might show up, and this woman might show up, and this person, and that person. And all of a sudden, all the talk became, well, which one of these ex-WWE or ex-Impact guys are coming back? And, I mean, let's be honest, that really was what this show was built on, in terms of trying to get people interested to pay for the show and to tune in. And I think to that effect, it was a little underwhelming. But, you know, would Rusev have showed up? I mean, maybe. You know, he's got COVID, so he's not showing up anywhere right now. Who knows? Who knows where he'll ultimately end up? But, you know, the promotion of the show was built on teasing all of these old and new faces potentially coming in. And I probably would have done the same thing if I were Impact, because the timing was just too perfect, right? The non-competes were up that same week. How do we get people to talk about our show? Wrestling has never been as, you know, you talk about wrestling going through these peaks and valleys of popularity. Wrestling has never been at this low level of popularity, I don't think, in the history of the business. Wrestling has never been less popular to the masses than it is today. That's going to make it that much harder for a company like Impact, who's on the, you know, the bottom rung, really, at the moment. I'm not saying in terms of talent, I'm just saying in terms of where they are in the pecking order. Under normal non-pandemic circumstances, it would be very difficult for this company to break through. During a pandemic, with all these empty arena shows and companies going under, you know, independent companies going under, they've got to do something to make a splash. And so that's what they did. But they basically just were banking on people tuning in to see who's going to show up. Is Heath, you know, which one of these released WWE guys is going to show up? Now that the show is over, the issue becomes, how do we get people to watch our TV show? So them doing a cliffhanger like they did here is smart. You've got to look ahead. Okay, Saturday is over. Well, what happens now when TV goes on Thursday? You know, is everybody just going to go away, or can we pick up a few new viewers out of it? So I like that. I like the cliffhanger tease. I like them promoting the, you know, machine guns going for the titles against the North. I think it was smart. But that was it. That was your Slammiversary pay-per-view for 2020. Their next pay-per-view is going to be their big Bound for Glory show Saturday night, October 24th. Josh Matthews is still very difficult to listen to. You know, there's no other way around it. I mean, Josh Matthews is just hard to listen to. They have some good talents on that roster. I hope that the ex-WWE guys find better luck. They find better luck there than they were having working under the Irish Madman. But, you know, me personally, I was having a hard enough time trying to get back into Impact. I used to watch Impact full time. You guys know that. I gave them plenty of chances over the years. Eventually you run out of chances, and then all these other promotions popped up and they just weren't a priority anymore. So it was already hard enough for me to try to get back into Impact when they had, you know, a few fans in the audience. In an empty building like this, listening to Josh Matthews shrieking in my ear, I can't do it. Like, that's just not going to happen. But I mentioned Anderson and Gallows signing with Impact, and this is our top story this week. They dropped their much-anticipated Talk and Shop podcast on YouTube, which they brought Ryan Satin in to host. He led the interview with the two of them. Very entertaining, very funny, but also very informative interview. And midway through, they brought in their friend Rocky Romero from New Japan Pro Wrestling. So Rocky got in on half the interview as well. And they talked about a ton of stuff, from when they decided that they had to get the hell out of WWE to why they ended up re-signing, how close they truly came to going to AEW, and what those creative plans entailed. The plane incident in Saudi Arabia, their release from WWE in April, and their heat with Paul Heyman that AJ Styles recently touched on. Styles had said that he was going to let Anderson and Gallows kind of tell the story, and they did. And it was great, too, because Gallows was drinking red wine the entire time out of this mug. So, like, as the interview went on, he got more and more, like, loose lips, right? They got more and more laid back and more open, I felt like, in his thoughts. And he was not opposed to burying people, namely Paul Heyman. You know, it's one of the things that I love about those Kevin Nash shoots. I feel like Kevin Nash has red wine running through his bloodstream. So, you know, because they used to joke about, like, Paul Bear and stuff. I think I heard somebody on TV once use this insult. You know, because Paul Bear used to be very fat. And so it was common on TV they would tell fat jokes about Paul Bear. I think I was Lawler. Who said this once, but said, like, Paul Bear is so fat, he's got ragu running through his bloodstream or something. When I think of Kevin Nash, he's got red wine running through his bloodstream. I feel like he's always got that red wine. So when he's drinking during some of his shoot interviews, it's always very entertaining. Always very entertaining. And as you know what they say, right? A drunk man's words are a sober man's thoughts. So I felt like that maybe made things a little more fun as they went on. So they signed a 3-year deal with WWE in 2016 and came in with AJ Styles, a lot of fanfare around their big debut. They all defected over from New Japan, and they had their run as the club. You know, AJ came in first, Anderson and Gallows came, I think, about a month and a half or 2 months later. And they were the club. And Anderson says that when they did that match on SmackDown later in the year, it was in October, probably like a Halloween episode. It was the match where they had some kind of like Halloween-themed match, and he ended up with a pumpkin on his head, and then he got put through a table. That was the first time where they're in the car, they're driving to the next town or whatever, and he just turns to Gallows and says, "What the hell did we just do? Like, what have we done?" And they were already thinking, in October of 2016, they were already eyeing September of 2019 when their contracts were up. They got buyer's remorse real early in that relationship. So I didn't know that that's how far back their buyer's remorse went on those contracts that they signed. But it was only about 7 months in, and they were already looking for the exit. Now you fast forward to January of 2019. All Elite Wrestling is born. They have that big press conference to announce the formation of the company and who all the EVPs are. And Chris Jericho was there. It was all this fanfare. Remember that big outdoor press conference? But the month before, in December, Anderson had heard, he had heard about what the Bucks were doing, and AEW had not been formally announced yet, but he knew something was going on there, and he was friendly with the Bucks. He was friendly with them, I assume, from his time in New Japan. And so he was texting them. And when WWE was in California for a house show, he and Gallows met up with the Bucks. They met at in the middle of a food court in a mall. So they're sitting there in the food court in the mall talking for like an hour, 2 hours, you know, whatever it was. And they're getting the full, you know, the full pitch on what's going to happen. Here's our plans. And they got the full pitch for what AEW is going to be. But they still weren't sure. They were not convinced. I mean, yeah, these guys are our friends. We trust them. We believe in them. But they were not sure that it was really going to happen. Because let's be honest here. I mean, how many times have we heard a new company is starting up and they put a press release out? Revolutionary. This is going to change the business. And we're going to get a big TV deal. We can't tell you where. The negotiations are still going on. But we're going to get a big TV deal. And we're going to, you know, it's going to change the business. How many times have we heard this? We've heard this a lot over the years. And rarely does anything ever happen. So these guys had good reason to be skeptical. But, you know, things were serious enough. They eventually even flew into Winnipeg. They had a meeting with Kenny Omega. So they got to sit down with Kenny and they were talking to Kenny. Fast forward to the summer of last year. Dynamite has already been announced. They put the release out in May, I think. TNT picked it up. Dynamite, I don't think it had a name at that point, but we knew that AEW was going to have a TV show soon on TNT. So that was already a done deal. And Anderson gets a text from Matt Jackson laying out, here are what our plans are going to be for your big debut. So when we have the premiere of Dynamite, I don't remember what the main event was. I guess it involved the Bucks and Kenny. I don't remember. But at the end of the night, at the end of the main event, you guys are going to come out. You're going to make your big debut. First episode of Dynamite, you guys are going to come out, you're going to two-sweet us in the middle of the ring, and then you're going to just beat the holy hell out of us and leave everybody laying, leave the Elite laying in the ring. And as Anderson was telling the story, you could tell how badly he regrets that they did not do that. It still irks him to this day. And there was heat on the AEW side, and there still is with some people apparently who were pretty high up in that company. They have since, now he claims they've since made amends with the Bucks and they're cool now. But for a while there, they weren't. You know, they said for a good 6 months leading up to the decision they made to re-sign with WWE, they gave Matt Jackson and the Young Bucks every indication that they were gone and they were coming into AEW. They would tell them, God, dude, we want out. We can't wait. We're just counting down the days. We want out. We're coming in. We're coming in. No matter what. No matter what, he told them, we're coming in. And Anderson says that there were hard feelings on the AEW side because he thinks what happens is that the Bucks went. They were convinced that these guys were coming in. And they went and they told people. I assume Tony Khan was one of those people. Hey, we got them. We got them. They're coming in. Let's come up with plans. This is going to be great. And then when they didn't come, it made them look like they couldn't close the deal. It made them look bad. You know, Gallo said that they have a friend who works for AEW in a pretty high up, what he called power position. He said he's also a wrestler. So that kind of limits it to who it could be. You can use your imagination on that. And he heard from that person who basically said, what the fuck, guys? Like, what the hell? And he still thinks that person is still offended by what happened. And his answer to that person, if that person ever hears the interview he says or reads the transcript of what we're saying here, is that, look, it was nothing personal. It was just a business decision that we made. He says they were looking at not only a ton of money, but a five-year deal with WWE as opposed to a two-year deal for less money. I mean, still very good money, but a two-year deal for less money with AEW. Should they have taken the smaller offer and bet on themselves and been something really cool again like they were in New Japan? Gallows said, fuck yeah. They've got egg dripping down their faces even still for the decision that they made. But he feels a lot of people in that same position would look at their wife or they would look at their kids. And it would be an easy decision to make to just take the money and run. Just take the WWE money, keep your mouth shut, go to work. And, you know, when the check comes in, cash the check. Or if you get direct deposit, enjoy it. I think it's very telling that these two ended up with Impact and not with AEW. Here's what I think. I think FTR basically took the spot that these guys would have had if they would have come in earlier. Not that AEW wouldn't have taken FTR necessarily because they really want to do that match with the Bucks and FTR. But, you know, if you kind of look at it as, okay, we've got a quota here of ex-WWE acts or ex-WWE teams. I just feel like FTR has that spot. You know, they have the spot that these guys could have had. I think that there was, you know, a spot for that one team to come over from WWE, and FTR wound up with that spot. That plus the lingering bad blood from people probably still in that company, there was no spot for them in AEW. They were not going to jump at the chance to sign these guys when these guys burned them last year. I 100% believe that they wanted to go to AEW, but the offer wasn't there this time. So they had to settle for Impact. Impact was probably their second choice. Look, they fucked over their friends. That's what they did. Anderson admits it. He said it exactly that way. We fucked over our friends. We fucked over our friends to stay at a place that they admitted to them made them absolutely miserable. It's like if I had a friend who told me for 6 months, dude, I'm coming in, brother. Like, I can't wait, dude. And I went and I made these big plans for him. And I told my boss, we got him. And then they didn't come in. I would be pissed too. And you know what? I would think twice before doing business with them. I could be friends with them, but I would have to think twice before I did business with these people. I can't fault the Young Bucks for that. I'm not going to shit on the Young Bucks for that. These two guys, they took a gamble, and it didn't pay off. If you are that unhappy, look, you dance with the devil, sometimes you get the horns. And that's exactly what happened to these two guys. I don't really have any sympathy for them. You know, they made good money, I guess, for the time their contract lasted, and they made it very clear. They're all about the money. Great, okay, it's the wrestling business. You want to make money. But it didn't work out for them in the end, now did it? They have nobody to blame for that but themselves. They talked about the incident in Saudi Arabia. This was very interesting. I didn't think they'd touch on this. This was the incident that took place after the Crown Jewel show last November, the one where the talent did not make it back to the States in time for SmackDown, and we got that great NXT edition of SmackDown. One of the best SmackDowns in years. We had Daniel Bryan against Adam Cole in the main event for the NXT Championship. That was the Crown Jewel show where Brock Lesnar beat Cain Velasquez in 2 minutes. We had Team Hogan against Team Flair and The Fiend. They tried to fix the mistake they made at Hell in a Cell, and The Fiend won the Universal Championship from Seth Rollins. Much of the crew did not make it back, did not make it out even of Saudi Arabia because of what WWE, to this day, claims was a mechanical issue with the plane. And they went to painstaking measures to explain and just nothing to see here. It was just a mechanical issue. That's it. Don't believe the rumors. But there were plenty of other stories about there being some kind of a blow-up with WWE and the Saudi government over something that may have led to the Saudis intentionally grounding that plane just to fuck with them, just to screw with WWE. And there is still no concrete proof of anything. We may never have proof. But this, to me, is the clearest indication yet that something did happen, that they did not want to get out because they still have years left on their deal with the Saudi government. They don't want to make them look bad. They don't want to piss them off. They wouldn't want that story to get out if there was a blow up and something did happen. But here's why I'm convinced something did happen. Carl Anderson tells a story. He says they had a 1 a.m. charter flight out of Saudi Arabia when the show was over. They get there 2 hours early. So they're waiting. They're waiting around 2 hours early to get on the plane. They see Vince McMahon and a few other people kind of pass by them and wave. And Vince gets on his own separate plane, of course, and he flies out of there. So Vince is gone. Everyone else is standing around waiting. They've been up all day. They've got a long flight back. A lot of them are going right to SmackDown. They just want to get on the damn plane and probably just go to sleep. Now it's 1 a.m., nothing's happening. Now it's 2 a.m., nothing's happening. They're still on the tarmac. They're not even on the plane. They're just standing around. Now it's 3 a.m., now it's 4 a.m., and nobody is telling them anything. Nobody is communicating anything to them about why is there a delay, what's going on. But what they do see are some guys talking. I guess some of the Saudis are talking, and it seems kind of heated. And then they see John Laurinaitis and Mark Carano from Talent Relations, and they're talking to people, and it's, again, these heated conversations are going on. And then they hear, Gallo says, I guess they got a text message from a friend of theirs who works in production for WWE and has no reason to bullshit them on this. This is not one of the boys. This is somebody, I don't know if he's a camera operator or who he is, but he works in production for the company. Obviously, he must have worked on the show that night, whatever this person's job is. And he gets a text message from this person who says that during the show, they could hear in the headsets Vince McMahon, and this was early on in the show, they could hear Vince McMahon yelling and telling people, maybe Kevin Dunn, whoever it would have been, to cut the feed. Now, that's not the feed for their network, WWE Network. That aired perfectly fine and live. But the show was airing locally on a certain channel in Saudi Arabia, and they could hear Vince McMahon basically saying, cut the feed. Now, the show was advertised in Saudi Arabia to be airing live. So let's say the show was going to air locally there at 7 o'clock. What we know is that the show did not air live at its scheduled time at 7 o'clock. It was an hour or two before the show then, on a delay, finally began airing. And they've never explained the reason for that delay. The belief was that Vince McMahon had an argument with the Saudi officials, probably over money that they were still owed, because the Saudis still owed them money from the previous shows. I don't know how much, but the figure that has been thrown around, which, I mean, it's a pretty big figure, is somewhere in the range of $500 million. But whatever the figure was that they were still owed, Vince McMahon wanted to be paid. And when he wasn't, he demanded that the feed be cut. I guess until the situation was resolved. And then, all of a sudden, voila, the feed was back. So this, and again, there is no concrete evidence of what happened, but I am convinced now that that's exactly what happened here. Now it all makes sense, because they kept those guys waiting around for so long. They got them on the plane eventually, then they sat there for even longer, they didn't move. Everyone on the plane is starting to freak out a little bit and texting each other. All the boys are texting each other, what the fuck, you know, what's going on here? Anderson leaned over to Michael Hayes. I love how Vince McMahon left Michael Hayes behind. He leans over to Michael Hayes, and he says to Hayes, and he was only maybe like partly joking. He goes, are we in like a hostage type situation here? And Michael Hayes just looks at him and goes, I don't know. That's his answer, which is very encouraging when you look to what basically one of your bosses and you ask, are we in a hostage type of situation here? And his response is, I don't know. I have no idea. So then eventually they got everybody off the plane and they got them all on buses and they were driving around trying to find a hotel with enough rooms available for all of them just to put them in. So they found one. I guess everybody took a quick nap and they didn't get them back on the plane to go home for another 24 hours or so. They said they never felt unsafe. It wasn't like people putting guns to their heads or anything like that, but they did feel very uncomfortable. You're in this foreign country. Of all places, you're in Saudi Arabia, which you know, you hear stories about the government there and stuff like that. You're in this foreign country. Your boss has already left. He's gone. He went home. You know, if Vince knew what was going on, would he have stayed? I'd like to think he would have. But boy, he got out of there real quick. He certainly didn't have any issues getting out of there. So they said, we never really felt unsafe, but we felt very uncomfortable. And, you know, they did see these heated conversations going on. And that's when they started to get a little bit worried. And Anderson even texted his wife. Carl Anderson texted his wife and told her, tell the kids I love them. Now, he didn't really think that their lives were in danger, but I guess he felt uncomfortable enough that he texted that to his wife. I did laugh. I laughed my ass off when they said that they did manage to get a flight out that night with a handful of main eventers to try to get them to SmackDown in time, which they ended up not making it. But they said when they saw them shuffling some of the main event guys, like scrambling to get these, like this small group of people onto a separate flight, and that flight left and that flight took off and got out of there. Meanwhile, everybody else is left standing around stranded. They thought, oh great, they're getting the top guys out of here so they can kill all of us. And Gallows just goes, ah shit, they're gonna kill the mid-carders. They're getting all the headliners out of here and they're just gonna kill the mid-carders. Just the way he said it, I fucking died when he said that. But then they looked around and they realized that, you know, they saw Cain Velasquez and they saw AJ Styles and then they saw Randy Orton. And once they saw Randy Orton, they knew they were okay. Once they saw Randy, they said, we're good. We don't got anything to worry about. They wouldn't leave Randy behind. If Randy had left, then we would have real problems here. But if Randy Orton is still here, then we're probably okay. But yeah, look, if the production people heard Vince McMahon yelling, cut the feed or yelling things in the headset, then obviously something was going on here. Obviously, they wouldn't want that to get out because they got years left on this relationship. Many, 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 many millions of dollars are at stake. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to make them look bad. They don't want to piss off their partners. So, of course, they would do everything in their power to make sure that story was squashed. But I thought that was very, very telling. Very telling. And very ridiculous to not explain to people what the hell was going on. You know, Michael Hay is supposed to be some real higher-up guy in the company, and his answer is, well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. What kind of answer is that? So, about a year before their WWE deals were up, Mark Carano comes to them. They see, these guys were just hoping. They knew they wanted out, right? They're like, all right, we got a year. We're a little over a year. Let's just keep our heads down, stay quiet, right? Show up to work, do what we got to do, and when the time is up for us, we'll leave and we'll get the hell out of here. So about a year before, Mark Carano says to them, hey, we got to talk about signing new deals. And they're like, ah, shit. And so they were hoping it would just be forgotten about, right? And just quietly slip away. They're like, well, they're not doing anything with us anyway, so maybe they just won't bring it up. But by that point, there had already been murmurs about AEW, right? It didn't have a name yet, but the stories were out there about Cody and the Bucks and Kenny Omega possibly starting their own company. WWE has to know that these guys are friendly with those guys. You know, getting Jericho involved was probably already circulating at that point. So WWE wanted to lock these guys down early. Triple H was the one who kept texting them every other day. He's like the crazy ex. He wouldn't stop. Texting them every other day, trying to get them to sign new deals. He was on their asses every single week. And then the three of them team up at a WWE live event in Japan. Triple H just so happens to be added to the show as a special attraction. And who is Triple H teaming with? Well, by God, it's the Good Brothers and AJ Styles. And there's that picture of them all doing the two sweet sign right in the ring together. Now, why do you think Triple H would add himself or would be added to team with the Good Brothers at a time when they're being courted to sign new contracts? I mean, come on. Could you be any less transparent about what you're trying to do here? So they go out there in Japan. They have the match. They come back. They take a shower. They come out of the shower. And Triple H pulls him aside and he's just flat out asks him. He goes, what is it going to take? Tell me. What is it going to take to get you guys to re-sign? And so he throws a number at them that just blew them away. And it was a high enough number for a lot of years, and they just felt like they couldn't turn it down. It was just an offer that they felt they couldn't turn down. And it was maybe a week or two later that the story broke that they had re-signed new deals with WWE. It wasn't even official yet, but the story was, and I think it might have been Ryan Satin, actually, who broke the story, that it was for 5 years each. The figure, and this was not in the story, but the figure that was bandied about in a lot of places and on a lot of websites was in the range of $750,000 a year each. I mean, even if it was $500,000 a year each, that's a lot of money. $750,000 a year for each member of the Good Brothers for 5 years apiece. I mean, if that doesn't tell you that WWE was just spending money at that point just to hoard talent and keep them from going to AEW, then you've got your head buried in the sand. I don't know what to tell you. You are hopeless. If you can't see that, you are hopeless. And all due respect to someone like Carl Anderson, you know, Gallows is very entertaining. I don't think Gallows is a great wrestler, but Gallows is, he's very entertaining. He's an entertaining guy. But look, if there's no AEW, there ain't no chance. There's no, I'll sing the Vince McMahon song. There ain't no chance in hell that Luke Gallows is getting a 5-year contract for $750,000 a year. There is no way that Carl Anderson is getting a 5-year contract for $750,000 a year. That's almost $4 million for each one of them. There is no way in hell that that happens without there being some kind of AEW effect. 0% chance. And here's the kicker. When Triple H was backstage with them in Japan, negotiating and trying to get them to sign, and they finally agreed, I mean, right there in Japan, they didn't even wait. They shook hands. They had a handshake agreement. They already, and again, like, I think about these things with these wrestlers, and I'm like, my God, like, how dumb are some of these people? Like, any kind of big deal like that, I understand the pressure involved, I guess, right? But these guys were, I mean, prime position. They had all the leverage in the world. It wasn't like WWE was going to suddenly pull the offer if you said to them, well, boy, you know, give us a day. Let us think about it. Let us talk to our families. Like, they clearly wanted these guys and wanted to stop them from going somewhere else. So you wait until you get home. You talk to your family. You talk to a lawyer. You talk to people and you think about something like this. Nope, they agreed on the spot. They agreed on the spot and they shook hands and that was the end of it. Unbelievable. So, but one of the things Triple H said, one of the things that Triple H said to try to convince Carl Anderson to sign, he looked him dead in the eye and he said, I look at you and I see your kids. Because Anderson has like 6 kids. He goes, I see your kids. And what if AEW doesn't last? He goes, I promise you, WWE will always be here. That was his hard sell. Think about your kids. AEW is unproven, which they were unproven. But we, here in WWE, we're always going to be here for you. Yes, WWE will always be here until they have no use for you anymore. Remember what I said when they got cut? Remember the words that I spoke when these guys first got cut. When you sign one of these big 5-year, they love signing people to 5-year contracts. When you sign a long-term deal, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is, with WWE, you don't have job security with that company. I think people equate like a big contract, a big long contract with job security. You hear about this in sports all the time. A lot of baseball players, they'll hold out for more years. You know, they don't want to sign a 2-year contract or a 3-year contract. They want to know that they're secure. They're going to move their family to a city. They're going to make that their home. They don't want to have to just up and leave and go. So, I mean, they could always be traded, but they want years. And some of these teams are dumb enough to dole out these stupid contracts for like 5 years, 6 years, 8 years for a player who may not even be in his prime anymore. And you just look at that and you're like, why would you give somebody who's probably going to just, you know, age out in the next 3 years? Why would you give him a 5 or 6 year contract? And so many teams get stuck with players that they just can't do anything with anymore. I mean, good for the players, right? I have no sympathy for the ball clubs. I mean, fuck them. But, you know, I kind of look at it like that. It's a situation where you look at that and equate that to job security. And with WWE, you can't do that because there is no such thing as job security. You know, and it's like you are stuck for those 5 years as an independent contractor, which is the other farce of this whole thing. You're stuck. You can't work anywhere else. Independent my ass. But WWE, they have the power to terminate you anytime they want. Anytime they want. It's not like they're it's not like they're stuck having to pay you the remainder of your contract. So much for that job security. You know, Maria Kanellis, I saw, tweeted out the quote, "Think about your family," and then she tagged, you know, at WWE in the tweet. I assume that means that they fed that same line to her and Mike Kanellis as well. I'm sure they've used that line on a lot of people before. Think about your family. Think about your kids. WWE, it's the biggest game in town. We're always going to be here. Yeah, okay, they're always going to be there, but they're not necessarily going to want you to work there. You can wave. You can drive past Titan Tower in Stamford and wave. That doesn't mean that they're going to want to keep you under contract or re-sign you to a new contract. So Anderson said a week after they agreed to their new deals, they were scripted to job to Ricochet on Raw. And they thought, well, we at least thought that we would have a few months before they start, you know, jobbing us out and trying to bury us. And he reached out to Triple H with his concerns. And Triple H told him to take it up with Paul Heyman, who had just been installed recently as the new executive director of Monday Night Raw. They were well aware of Heyman's reputation as one of the biggest bullshitters in the history of the business, but they were kind of hoping that with us, hopefully that won't be the case. Hopefully he'll be a straight shooter. He'll just, you know, be honest with us and tell it to us like it is, and we can have a great relationship. And Heyman told them, he goes, look, we already have plans to put the tag team titles on you. Don't worry. We're going to put the titles on you soon. And Gallows claims that Heyman told him, if I ever lie to you, I want you to go on social media and I want you to bury the shit out of me. Which, of course, now Luke Gallows is more than happy to go out and bury Paul Heyman. But that's what he claims Heyman said to him. I won't ever lie to you. If I ever lie to you, you just bury my ass. So they talked about how upset AJ Styles was when it became very clear that his big match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania was not going to happen at Raymond James Stadium because of the pandemic. No big stadium show. It was probably going to be at the Performance Center. And they said AJ was very upset. I'm sure everybody. I'm sure Drew McIntyre was very upset. He got deprived of his big WrestleMania moment. You only get one of those. You know, Drew McIntyre could go win title number two, title number three at WrestleMania, you know, next year, 2 years from now, but nothing can ever really replicate that first big win. And it happened in an empty building. This is before they were even having the NXT stand-ins in the crowd. It was an empty freaking building. So I felt bad for someone like him. So yeah, I'm sure AJ was pretty pissed about that. But then they did the Boneyard match. Anderson and Gallows were part of that, and it came off better than they ever could have imagined. And they got text messages from Triple H and Michael Hayes. Oh, thank you so much. Guys, this came off so great. This was fantastic. Thank you. And they didn't think for a second a few weeks later when they heard that there were some people who were on the chopping block. Because they had just signed those new deals only a few months earlier. And they were also just involved in one of the main events of WrestleMania. And they just got text messages from their bosses thanking them and telling them what a fantastic job they thought they all did. So, of course, you would think, well, you know, my job is safe. My job is not in jeopardy. I feel bad for my colleagues and my friends, but I don't think we have anything to be worried about. But looking back, they say they probably should have suspected something when they were booked to be stacked on top of each other 1 week on Raw and pinned by Drew McIntyre. This was in the build-up to WrestleMania. But Paul Heyman, you know, assured them. He said, it's not going to hurt you in the long run. Don't worry about it. It's not going to hurt you in the long run. They said in WWE, they have an internal system that helps filters messages out to the talent. Apparently Vince McMahon sent a video out on WhatsApp, which just, I don't know why, that just makes me laugh. I've heard stories about Vince McMahon, how much he loves texting. And apparently, like, he, like, texts people with, like, capital letters, like, he's like the screaming grandpa. But, like, Undertaker, even in his documentary, talked about getting text messages from Vince. He's, like, cussing all the time. Like, when Undertaker told him, okay, I'm in. Like, I'm in for WrestleMania this year. Vince McMahon was like, fuck yeah. Like, I can just, and CM Punk would tell stories about getting text messages from Vince McMahon at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning. But I guess Vince McMahon recorded a very brief video that went out on WhatsApp to all of the talent on, I think it was Black Wednesday, right? It was a Wednesday when all the cuts were first announced back in April. Letting everybody know that unfortunately, because of the pandemic, we're going to have to be cutting costs and there's going to be talent releases throughout the day. So you may be getting a message from us. It's sad, but this is what has to happen. And then throughout the day, you know, Anderson and Gallows, they see the list. They see all of these names being added to the list. Hawkins and Ryder and, you know, No Way Jose and Aiden English and all of these different people. And they feel bad for them. But then Carl Anderson gets a call from Mark Carano giving him the bad news. And he was furious. He just wanted him off the phone. Yeah, he understands that Carano is the hatchet guy. I mean, Mark Carano is in the same spot that Jim Ross used to be in. J.J. Dillon used to be in. Johnny Ace used to be in. It is the worst position in the world to be in because you are paid to be the bad guy. Vince McMahon is not the one who's going to go deliver the bad news. It's you. Your responsibility is to go up to the talent or call them on the phone and give them the bad news. And so they get blamed. They're the hatchet man. It is a thankless, shitty job. And so Carano's like, I'm really sorry about this. And I don't think he blamed Carano, but he was so angry. He just was like, okay. He just wanted him off the phone. And then Carano said, well, I got to call your partner now. So he called Luke Gallows, and Gallows also, he couldn't believe it. They were stunned that they were on the list. When AJ found out, AJ Styles was livid when he heard that he hit the roof when he heard the news. And so he started asking around, you know, what the hell happened here? And he was told by somebody, whoever it was, backstage, that Paul Heyman was the one behind it. So AJ went to Heyman and he said to him, well, you were the one responsible for this? Did you put their names on the list? And Heyman denied it. He said, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. It's not my fault. AJ went to Vince McMahon. And that's when Vince McMahon confirmed what that first person had told AJ, which is that it was Heyman. And Vince claimed, look, they weren't on my list. So Vince McMahon had his own list. And he claims that Anderson and Gallows were not on his list of names to be let go. It was all a Heyman decision. So he shifted the blame completely onto Paul Heyman. And that was when AJ said he couldn't work with Heyman and they traded him back to SmackDown to separate him, keep him away from Heyman. Of course, in the end, it didn't matter because it was only like a week later, 2 weeks later maybe, that Paul Heyman was fired from his position. Gallows, you listen to them speak and obviously they do not like Paul Heyman. Gallows called Heyman a fucking liar and a piece of shit. And look, I am sure that Paul Heyman is not blameless in this, and I am sure that Paul Heyman told them things that they wanted to hear. Paul Heyman lying to people is not breaking news. I am not saying that they do not have a reason to be upset with Paul Heyman if they felt that he did not deal with them in good faith. Go ahead and you want to shit on him, go ahead and shit on him. But Gallows himself admits that Vince McMahon could have interjected and stopped it. And he opted not to. But it's like, it was almost said in this interview here as an afterthought. I think he buried the plot, which is that Vince McMahon could have put his foot down and said no, and he chose not to. Vince McMahon did not want Anderson and Gallows under contract. He thought they were expendable. If he wanted to keep them, he was the one person with the power to do so, and he didn't. Yet they shit all over Paul Heyman, and they give Vince McMahon a pass. That was the funniest takeaway from this entire interview. Paul Heyman wanted the Good Brothers fired, and poor Vince McMahon, you know, his wrinkly hands, they were tied. There was nothing he could do about it. He could not overrule Paul Heyman. I guess Paul Heyman had the autonomy that, you know, Cowboy Bill Watts was told he would have, but never had back in 1995. Vince McMahon must be going soft. If you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at Vince McMahon. Nothing happens in that company without that guy's approval. If he wanted to keep them, then guess what? They would still be working there right now. Anderson says that he thinks when word got around about their contracts, and boy, people, there's a lot of loose lips in that company, because it wasn't long after they signed those contracts, everybody knew what they made, apparently. Guys were coming up to them in the back, wow, you know, you made, like, how would they even know about this? If they didn't tell anybody, right, the person they negotiated the deal with was Triple H. How does this stuff, you know, behind the scenes, dollar figures and stuff like that get out? Boy, there's a lot of loose lips in that company. But what Anderson says is that he thinks when word got around about their contracts, there were a lot of people, including some agents, and they name drop people like Jamie Noble and Michael Hayes, who probably didn't like it. Or they didn't think that they were worth it for the spot that they were in, which is certainly a valid argument to make. But they got in Vince's ear, and that they may have convinced Vince McMahon, you know, don't step in here, they have to go. Whatever it was, the story here is, it's not that Paul Heyman fired Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. Vince McMahon fired Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. There's your headline. And if AJ Styles felt that he couldn't work with Paul Heyman because of that, then how does he justify working for Vince McMahon? But Paul Heyman, well, boy, you know, he's the one that can't be trusted. Triple H begs this guy to sign. Think about your family, think about your kids, and then months later they get fired. I just think it's very funny they didn't use the same language for him that they used to describe Paul Heyman, but I guess we all know why that is, right? You don't want to burn those bridges in case one day you get another big money contract offer. But I just thought that was the funniest part of the entire interview. I had a nice laugh at this idea that Paul Heyman had so much stroke and so much power in this company, Vince McMahon was powerless to do anything about it. Funniest fucking thing I heard all day yesterday. You know, I get why AJ Styles would be upset. AJ Styles, after this happened, he went on his mixer. And he said he felt like he let his friends down. He felt like he was responsible. I could have done more. There was nothing he could have done. I mean, how could he even know that they were on the bubble? Those two guys had no idea that their jobs were in jeopardy. How would AJ know? The company's not going to consult with AJ before they fire them. How could AJ know? There was nothing he could have done. But it's like Anderson said, when those guys were trying to decide which deal they were going to take, they had some big money offers on the table, not just from WWE. They had big money offers from Impact, from New Japan, and from AEW, right down to the creative on how they were going to debut. Same with New Japan. New Japan, Rocky Romero, whoever it was, told them how they were going to bring them in, how they were going to bring them back. They were going to attack John Moxley, who was the United States champion at the time. They would come in, they would lay out Moxley, and eventually it would build to a U.S. title match at the Tokyo Dome between Moxley and Karl Anderson, with Karl Anderson winning the championship. So they laid out their creative plans in New Japan as well, not just AEW. So they had all these options on the table, and they said AJ was trying to convince them to stay with WWE because AJ stayed with WWE. AJ could have left too. He signed a new deal, and he wanted his friends to sign too. He wanted his friends to stay with him. And so they do, and then 6 or 7 months later, they get the axe. You know, if you're AJ Styles, you got to feel like you played a part in convincing your buddies to stay, and now you have a job and they don't. So I get why he would feel partially responsible. I don't think that WWE ever wanted these guys. I agree with them when they say that Vince McMahon said at Triple H, they didn't know shit about their history with New Japan. They knew they worked in Japan. They even had the announcers mention it on TV sometimes, former IWGP tag team champ. You think Vince McMahon knew that Anderson and Gallows were IWGP tag team champions? You say IWGP in front of Vince McMahon, he probably looks at you like you got a third eyeball in the middle of your head. Triple H, I doubt Triple H was up on their full history in New Japan as well. Those guys didn't know. They didn't give a shit about their history in New Japan. They didn't care one way or the other. They saw them as a package deal to get AJ because the three of them were this close to signing with Impact. AJ said they even had a meeting at Dixie Carter's house. Dixie Carter's house. I'm sure they were having tea with their little pinky in the air at Dixie Carter's house. That's how close they were to leaving Japan and going to Impact. And then Triple H came calling. Without a doubt in my mind, WWE took these two guys to make sure they got the grand prize. The grand prize was AJ Styles. And once they got him, you know, they pushed Anderson and Gallows for about 3 minutes. And then when they got bored with them, they brushed him off to the side. They pushed the guy they really wanted in the first place, and they forgot about the other two. 6 months later, Carl Anderson had a pumpkin on his head. AJ Styles was the WWE champion, and Carl Anderson had a fucking pumpkin on his head. They fucked up. And I think they know they fucked up. You know, it's not always just about the money. They still could have made great money. But instead of taking great money for more freedom and happiness, they took ridiculous money to go right back to the same situation they were in before. Remember what they said in this very interview. They were having buyer's remorse on choosing WWE 7 months into a 3.5-year deal. They knew 7 months in that they were going to be looking for the exit. They knew they made a terrible mistake. And WWE did nothing to convince them otherwise in 2017 or in 2018. And then comes 2019 and they got blinded by greed. And greed is good, I guess, if that's all that drives you. But then, you know, a week after re-signing, they're already texting Triple H about problems with creative. The exit ramp was right there. All they had to do was turn the car. The GPS was begging them, turn right. And instead, they kept going straight. Because they were naive. They were naive to think that things would be any different. And they got played, and they fucked over their friends in the process. That's why they're on Impact now, and not on AEW Dynamite. Fortunately for them, Impact offered them the same terms that they offered them last year when their deals were coming up. They signed a 2-year contract that also allows them, once the borders open back up again, to take dates with New Japan, so long as it does not conflict with any dates from Impact. Some other news and notes. Kevin Owens confirmed to ESPN that he was the one who got Vince McMahon to institute a fining system for anybody caught not wearing a mask at the Performance Center. He told Vince that he was not comfortable performing there after he saw all of the extras in the crowd were not wearing masks, people in the back were not wearing masks, and they were socializing and just treating the whole situation really like it was a joke. His wife's grandfather recently died from COVID, so you can understand why he and his wife would be concerned, and so he was ready to go home. You know, he wasn't pushy about it. He wasn't, you know, making demands, oh, do this or else. He was just going to leave. He was going to go home. He was going to do what Sami Zayn did. He was going to do what Roman Reigns did. And I'm sure Vince McMahon did not want to lose Kevin Owens as well. And he said to Kevin Owens, he goes, well, what do you think we should do? You know, should we start fining people? Because Vince McMahon did not think that fining people would work. And Kevin Owens reminded him that he was once fined for swearing on SmackDown and that after he got fined, he never swore again. So for him, that was a good deterrent. And Vince McMahon said, well, okay, you know, how much do you think the fines should be? He wanted Owens' input. How much should they be fined? And Owen said, well, I mean, it should be enough that they get the message, but, you know, not so much that they can't afford to pay it. And so it is $500, supposedly, for not wearing a mask, and $1,000 for repeat offenses. Speaking of COVID, Rusev says that he tested positive. He made the announcement on his Twitch stream. He said he got a phone call from a doctor. After initially being told that he was negative, turns out he was positive. And that is after both of Lana's parents tested positive. But she has not, at least to our knowledge. Maybe she has and she doesn't want to go public with it, but she has not said that she has tested positive. Hopefully it stays that way, but look, I can't imagine that we see her on TV so long as she is living in the same house with somebody who is sick. She should be quarantining the way that Jon Moxley did when he found out that Renee was sick. So I don't know that we're going to see Lana on TV for maybe a couple more weeks. Raven was on the Hannibal TV YouTube channel and claimed that Billy Corgan is going to be shutting down the NWA. I guess he had gotten close with Corgan and worked with him in recent years. Resistance Pro was Corgan's, the independent promotion that he was booking and running in Chicago there for a while. And I don't know if Raven was working with him, you know, in Resistance Pro, or if there was some overlap there. Maybe Raven was an Impact when Billy was there. I don't really recall. But, you know, I guess they're friendly or they've talked. And, you know, he claimed that in light of the resignation of Dave Lagana and what we'll call, I guess, the COVID crunch, you know, everything going on right now, that they were going to be shutting things down. Billy Corgan publicly refuted this claim very quickly. He posted this on Instagram. He said, a quick note about the National Wrestling Alliance, which I fought for and I won ownership of a few years back. We are not shutting down. So please disregard any and all rumor to that effect. The NWA is not and will not be for sale, and those talent who are under contract remain under contract for a reason, which is that we at the NWA are trying to figure out a way to provide our great fans with wrestling content in a very, very tough environment. And most importantly, keep our talent safe and the standard of our production that you have come to expect from us at a high level. Anything less, in my opinion, is unacceptable. So yes, appreciate the interest, appreciate the chatter, but don't appreciate the unsourced rumors and speculation. So, yeah, that's encouraging at least. I was pretty bummed when I heard Raven say that. Didn't necessarily take what he was saying for gospel, but it wouldn't have shocked me to come to find out that Billy Corgan was going to wind things down. Lagana did everything for them. I mean, not literally, but like, he did. I mean, he was the guy that handled production and a lot of the YouTube content, which is why we really haven't seen any new content produced by the NWA since he resigned. And then you add in the whole COVID situation and they can't run shows and they seem to be doing well enough. I mean, they weren't having these big, big shows, but you take all of that away and, you know, people are asking for their releases in some cases. You didn't have a huge roster to start with. And Corgan has said before, you know, he is independently very wealthy. You know, he's got all that Smashing Pumpkins money, but that doesn't mean that he's going to lose all of his money on his wrestling ventures. There is a budget. You've got to be budget conscious. And so they're in a tough spot. And who's to say that 6 months from now, Billy's tune doesn't change? I hope not. I hope they could find a way to survive. I would hate to lose the NWA as well. It was bad enough losing Lucha Underground. I don't want to lose the NWA too. But that's encouraging that he has batted down those rumors. Meanwhile, Fightful.com reported that Ricky Starks, who has since signed with AEW, he left the NWA. He had passed on a new contract offer that was said to be for $1,000 a month. Zicky Dice, who is still the reigning NWA television champion, mind you, he has asked for his release. He was told that it would be granted. I don't know if it's official yet or not. Zicky Dice was offered $250 a month at one point, and he passed on that offer. Now, those sound like comically low dollar amounts. Keep in mind, though, that that's for maybe a couple of days' work in the span of a month. They tape TV. They're not running house shows. They're not running live events. They're not doing pay-per-views, I think, every single month or anything. So it's for a very limited work schedule. But still, right? $250 a month. That sounds very bad. That sounds very bad. Especially, this guy is a champion. He's the NWA television champion. I don't know if he was the champion when they made that offer to him. $250 a month, even if you're only working limited dates in a month. I mean, that's, yeah. I don't know that I would necessarily accept that offer either.
You know what I'm going to do about it? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tweet my displeasure. And if that doesn't work, then by God, me and my friend Mark, we're going to stop watching. That's right.
Remember that gem of a promo from Triple H after Battleground? That was 6 years ago this very month. And look, he's not totally wrong. The internet does love to voice its displeasure. They were certainly, they'll certainly let you know if they don't like something. And yes, a lot of fans will make idle threats about not watching anymore or canceling their WWE Network subscription. And then, of course, not only do they not follow through, they're right back for the next show. That's true. That does happen a lot. But there are also a lot of fans who have stopped watching the product and who have canceled their network subscription. That was 6 years ago when Triple H mocked the fans and basically said, keep whining, you're not going anywhere. That episode of Monday Night Raw from July 21st, 2014, did 4.43 million viewers over the course of those 3 hours. Monday Night Raw this week set a new record for the lowest recorded overnight audience in the 27-year history of the show. 1.56 million viewers. That equates to a 1.15 Nielsen rating. 1.15. That works out to be a roughly 65% decrease in audience from that show in 2014 to this week's show. And no, the pandemic did not chase away 65% of the audience. It chased away some, but it did not chase away 65%. This has been a steady decline. It is a decline that I predicted the moment the WWE announced that they were going 3 hours every single week in 2012. And actually, it might have been this month. Boy, this is a very busy month, anniversary-wise. I believe it was July of 2012 when the three-hour change became permanent. USA Network wanted the third hour, so they gave him a third hour. And it has been downhill ever since. And bad creative is a big part of that, too. Could you do a compelling three-hour show? Sure, a three-hour show is compelling. Can you do a compelling three-hour show every week, 51 or 52 weeks out of the year? No. No, I don't believe you can. These people? No. Impossible. When you put together boring shows for long enough, when you mail it in for so long, you get to a point where even when you're having some good episodes, and there are people who think that we are on a string of good shows right now. Let's say that's the case. It doesn't matter. Because you have squandered whatever goodwill you may have had with your audience. It's gone. So yes, you can look back and say Triple H was a heel, he was with the authority, he was only playing a character on TV. All of that is true. And it's still exactly what they think about their fans. There was so much truth in that promo, in that worked promo, that people just cannot even fathom. There is so much truth. There are probably, I don't know how many people, are probably backstage who work in the upper hierarchy of that company who I guarantee you, they heard that promo that night. There's a reason that promo was scripted. and they agree with every single word of it. They don't know what they want. We know what's best for them. They're going to complain and keep watching anyway, and so it doesn't matter. As long as they're there, it doesn't matter. And look at where we are now. 65% of the audience gone. Record lows every week. Nobody cares anymore. And what do you think is going to happen when sports come back? Baseball's coming back. I just watched a Mets game last night. The Mets lost. They got freaking trounced by the Yankees. But I just watched baseball last night for the first time, which was great. It was a little unnerving seeing cardboard cutouts of fans in the crowd behind home plate. That was a little weird. That was very strange. That was very strange. But sports are coming back. The NFL season is going to be coming back this fall. Now, there's always a drop-off when Monday Night Football returns, right? Every single year we go through this, there's always some drop-off. Just think, as bad as things are now, it could get a lot worse. And it will. Oh, it will. You think this is ugly? You wait a couple more months. You want to see ugly? You wait a few more months. When this pandemic is over, a lot of these people are not coming back. If they're lucky, they'll get back over 2 million viewers. They'll get back. I think they could do that. They'll get back to over 2 million viewers. But the days of 3 million, 4 million viewers, even with DVR factored in, those days are over. Over. And that was routine, by the way. 3.5, 4 million. It's funny to think like how quickly times change, because even when the audience was in the 4 million range, people mocked Raw and said, my God, I remember when the show was doing 6, 7, 8 million viewers a week. 4 million is garbage. Are you kidding me? Vince McMahon would be doing a 650 off the top of Titan Tower if he could get those numbers back from 6 years ago when Triple H cut that promo. And the people crowing about demos and stuff, which are very important, the demos are down too. Across the board, they are down. Everything is down. Those days are over. And you can't just blame COVID. You can't just blame cord cutters. When you lose 65% of your audience in 6 years, the fans are not the problem. The virus is not the problem. The problem is you. You are the virus. The one thing they can hang their hat on is that they were first in some of the male demos. But like I said, even those are trending in the wrong direction. That 18 to 49 number is down 40% from where they were a year ago. I guess Triple H's friend Mark found something better to do with his time after all. Some quick Raw thoughts here. Ruby Riott finally won one over the Iconics, although she didn't actually score the winning fall, which was kind of weird. But whatever. She teamed with the returning Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair is back. She is not relegated to main event duty anymore. Or maybe she still will be, but at least she was on Raw this week. She's been on the back burner for a few months. Creative had nothing for her to do. But the only reason we even got her back on TV this week is because Liv Morgan was not available. This was to have been Liv Morgan's spot. She was going to be the one teaming with Ruby Riott, but instead they put Bianca in the spot. A win for Ruby and Bianca back on TV, that to me, that's a thumbs up right there. Those are two good things. I don't know what's going to happen, though, as far as their team goes when Liv does come back. R-Truth against Tozawa never happened because Shayna Baszler interrupted. Speaking of returns, another woman we haven't seen on Raw in months. She took out Tozawa's ninjas. Again, with the ninjas on this show. Took them all out by herself. Cut a short promo talking about all the other women thinking and hoping that her reign of terror, you know, was over and it was a distant memory. But she promises to bring a hard dose of reality to everybody who stands in her way. It's about damn time. If they do keep Bianca on TV and you've got Shayna back, it'll be good to at least have a little more variety with the women on Monday Night Raw. So that's a good thing. R-Truth, by the way, for those of you who may have missed it, R-Truth has a new game show on the WWE Network. I'm kind of bummed that with the whole pandemic and everything that they're doing it via Zoom or Skype or whatever they're doing. Were it not for the pandemic, maybe they'd be able to tape it in a studio like an actual game show with an audience and everything. I think R-Truth would be great in that role. I think he would thrive. But there was a pilot that they did, I think, in the last few years for an R-Truth game show, and then it just got put on the shelf. And it was never used. And so they've dusted it off. R-Truth has a game show now. It's him in his home studio asking a series of questions to different wrestlers. This first episode, it's up on the network right now. Alexa Bliss and Sheamus were the contestants. So he would ask Alexa a bunch of questions, and then the second half of the episode was Sheamus. So I assume it'll be that format, you know, each week. I thought it was fun. I thought it was very entertaining. I think Truth is awesome in that role. And it's just, you know, asking just different questions, trivia questions, and then asking them to run around their home. And in 2 minutes, like, Truth will say, show me this, or show me something from high school, or show me your first championship that you won. And they've got to run around and grab the items. And, you know, it's stuff like that. So anyway, if you were not aware of this, because WWE, I don't think even mentioned it on TV. And if they did, I apologize, but I don't remember this being mentioned on TV. It is on the network. So go ahead and check it out. Aleister Black and Murphy, these two always work well together when they're actually given time. They're like Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic, right? Matched up too often? Probably. But they can't have a bad match with one another. This wasn't even much of a match. They had a very short one on Monday night. I loved that Black Mass kick with Murphy standing on the middle rope, and then you just see his body just crumble down to the mat. And then it was ruined by a DQ finish when Seth Rollins got involved. Kevin Owens did beat Seth Rollins again, WrestleMania rematch. Rey and Dominik were outside, and Aleister. So there was a little bit of a distraction that allowed Owens to hit the stunner and get the pin. One match that is not taking place tonight, but is being saved for tomorrow night, non-sanctioned. Randy Orton against The Big Show. This will have SummerSlam implications because Randy Orton is likely going to be the next person challenging Drew McIntyre for the WWE title. Ric Flair, poor Ric Flair. He is completely oblivious to the fate that awaits him. The only question is, does he get RKO'd? Does he get punted? Is he even physically cleared to take a bump? You know, these shows are taped, so they could always do what they did with remember the whole Batista thing when Batista came back? And they cut to the locker room and he had beaten up Ric Flair. They didn't show you that he beat up Ric Flair. You only heard this commotion behind the door. Then he dragged Flair's body out. Maybe they'll do something like that with Orton where we don't actually see it. But yeah, Randy Orton is going to lay waste to the Nature Boy. And that'll be good because he can punt him back into quarantine, which is where he should have been this entire time. But as far as a prediction, I predict Orton to beat Big Show and go on to SummerSlam. I mean, to me, it can't be any other way. Sasha and Bayley defended their women's tag team titles against the Kabuki Warriors and retained them. Very good main event on Monday night. Sasha tapped out Kairi Sane with the bank statement for the win. So, you know, there were a few bright spots on this show. On Raw Talk, when it was over, Kairi told Asuka that she was ready to challenge her for the Raw Women's title after she got past Sasha Banks at Extreme Rules. And there have been a lot of rumors about Kairi leaving the company, going back to Japan. I think she just got married. I do believe she is going back. I do believe that this is going to be it for her. This summer is the summer of Kairi, and then I think she's leaving. And if they're going to do Asuka versus Kairi on the way out, I'm all for it. I think that could be an incredible match. A lot of fun. If you put Asuka and Kairi in the ring together one-on-one. Obviously, the finish would not be in doubt, but I am on board for that if that is the plan. Now, someone sent me a link. I don't even know how they come across these things, but I'm glad they do, and I'm glad they tell me about it. They came across the official WWE Arabic Instagram page. And a post that was previewing the Drew McIntyre-Dolph Ziggler match at Extreme Rules. And the Arabic to English translation, at least in Google Chrome, didn't exactly come across well. They referred to Dolph as being Drew's ex-boyfriend. I mean, I had no idea they were even involved, but hey, it's none of my business. But it got me wondering. I said, I wonder what other funny translations there might be on WWE's Arabic Instagram page when I go from Arabic to English. And I would imagine that it is probably similar across other languages as well. I haven't tried it with like French and German and other languages. I mean, they probably have Instagram pages, official ones. You got to look for the little blue check mark. But anyway, I would imagine it's probably like this on some other pages as well. But I haven't tried those out yet. I found some funny ones here. I thought just to kind of lighten the mood, I would share some of them with you. First of all, this pay-per-view tonight must have a different name for the Arabic audience, because nowhere do any of these posts that have the Extreme Rules name or the hashtag in them mention Extreme Rules. Instead, they all refer to it as Extreme Roles, which sounds like something that I would watch on the Food Network. I would totally watch that. Extreme Roles. They had this one picture of the WWE champion, Drew McIntyre, and it had this caption. Said Drew McIntyre talks about his plans to defend his title against Dolph Ziggler, apparently he's German now, in the Extreme Show Roles Horror Show, and how their relationship will affect the course of the upcoming battle. In previewing the battle between Randy Orton and R-Truth, they had a match on Raw last Monday night. This caption reads, after falling forbidden and crashing into the snake behind the scenes last week, 24/7 Ruth Truth faces Randy Orton tonight in Raw. I guess it's, Monday Night Raw, R-A-O, I guess is the name of the show. On Shayna Baszler's return, we have this gem. Shayna Baszler returned today at the Raw show. Oh, sorry, Shayna Baszler. China, and it's not China like C-H-Y, it's China. C-H-I-N-A. So, Shayna Baszler. With this photo of Ruby and Bianca's victory from Monday night, caption says, from 1 to 10, what is your assessment of the new duo of Bianca Blair and Roby Raiot? What is she, Israeli? That sounds Israeli. Just kind of funny on an Arabic language page that the translation would kind of come across as Israeli, but that's a whole other issue. Let's see here. They were promoting a mystery guest on A Moment of Bliss with Alexa Bliss from SmackDown this week. This was the caption: Alexa Place will host A Moment of Place, a star whose identity has not been revealed, but it will be a surprise tonight in SmackDown. Who will you be? Then we have this. Bray Wyatt will send his last message to Universal Champion Braun Strowman tonight in SmackDown, 2 days before their upcoming showdown in the horror show Extreme Roles. And Shayna Baszler was good, but this one may be my favorite. In previewing the Damian Priest-Cameron Grimes battle from this week's NXT, this says, Damian Breast seeks revenge on Cameron Grimes when he meets him face-to-face tonight at NXT. Now, there's a first name that I would like to see Vince McMahon cut when he gets called to Raw or SmackDown. Damian Breast. Get rid of his first name. I guarantee you this guy will get over. So, maybe we'll do more of these in the weeks to come. I smell a new feature here on this show, but only if they're funny. I mean, if they're not funny, I'm not going to do them. But this is nice because I kind of miss the old closed captions that I used to do. they don't have those anymore. They're not all like messed up like they used to be. And I think we all need a little bit of a laugh these days. So anyway, hopefully you enjoyed that. Speaking of breasts, Charlotte Flair was in the news this week. Charlotte Flair, as you know, is taking some time away from television. There's no word on when exactly she'll be back, but because of all the rumors going around and stuff being said about her, she took to Twitter to post a series of tweets being very open and just explaining why she's taking time away. And so just to kind of run through these tweets, everybody is aware of why we are not seeing Charlotte Flair for a little while. She said, my air conditioning is broken, And we have a little free time. Yeah, I have no air conditioning in here right now either because it makes too much noise. So I'm sweating bullets here, but I'd do it for you. But anyway, she says, my air conditioning is broken. I have some time. These tweets may be spaced out a bit, but we're gonna talk about taking time off, plastic surgery, and boobs. The entire world having an opinion on the topic bothers me more than I care to let on, and so we are going to discuss it. I'm going to save the history of my boobs for a different bedtime story, so picture it. Charlotte, North Carolina, 2018, a young queen shortly after her career-defining WrestleMania victory, finds herself sicker than sick at her brother's house. Says, a trip to the doctor tells us that the likely culprit is silicone poisoning and that my implant has been leaking for quite some time. It was one of the worst cases the doctor had ever seen. At that time, I had few options to fix the issue. Each option had a specific recovery time. I love this job more than anything, so I picked the option that allowed me to return the soonest. That was the choice that I made. Fast forward to a few months ago. Something felt off, so I went back to the doctor, same issue again. This time, I'm going with an option that I believe will solve the issue long time, even though the recovery period is a little longer than I would like. And then she was responding to some other people here who said, you don't have to explain yourself. She said, you're absolutely right. I don't owe anybody anything, but I will not allow people to think that I am somehow ashamed of it for even a second longer. She says, to clarify, I do not have silicone poisoning at this time. The surgery is cosmetic to fix an issue from a prior surgery. I'll be back when I am ready. The body will be rested. The mind will still be focused on legacy, focused on this job, focused on being better, always being better. And she's right. She doesn't have to explain herself to anybody. I mean, people make little comments and stuff, but she certainly doesn't have to explain herself to anybody, but there it is. There's the explanation straight from Charlotte herself. And honestly, this might explain why she always lands on her feet with these moonsaults, which just don't look good. Why does she always land on her feet? I think now we know why. Now it all makes sense. She still needs to stop doing that move, I think, but now it all makes sense. SmackDown this week was an improvement from the week before. That is not much of a compliment. One of those COVID tests where they shove a swab up your nose into your brain would have been more pleasurable than this show from 2 weeks ago. They did something a little bit different for the opening of the show this week. They took a page from the old Saturday Night's Main Event playbook. Remember those old SNME episodes back in the day? Oh, I love saying that. Back in the day, right? Back in the day. I feel like wrestling fans are saying that more often now than ever. Back in the day. But sometimes when they go back to the well, there are ideas from 20, 30 years ago that are still, I think, good, that could still be used to improve your TV product even today. And this is one of them. I enjoyed this. So what they used to do is they'd come on NBC, and they'd have this hot beat in the background. And as the music was playing, they would bounce from one promo to another, one pre-tape promo to another with the wrestlers who were going to be appearing on the show that night. And it really did a good job, I think, of getting you amped up for the show. And then, boom, they'd go right into the Saturday Night's Main Event intro. So here, they did the intro first. They did the usual SmackDown intro. But then they cut to AJ Styles in the back, talking about his Intercontinental title match with Matt Riddle. And they played this really dramatic, like, Hollywood... It sounded like a car chase music or something, like in a Hollywood movie or a thriller or something. They went from an AJ promo to a Matt Riddle promo to an Alexa Bliss promo to a Miz and Morrison promo, which I thought was awful, absolutely dreadful. Miz kept referring to Braun Strowman as the monster among men, Braun Strowman. Aren't you afraid of facing the monster among men, Braun Strowman? More than once, Miz did this. No human being on earth talks like that. It is one of my biggest pet peeves with this show. Leave that to the announcers. Let Michael Cole be the geek and mention it for all the people at home. He's the monster among men. It's boss time. It's boss time. The big dog. Let him be the geek. Why do the wrestlers have to be the geek? Let him be the geek. God, I hate when they do that. That sucked. Cesaro and Nakamura, they had a promo, and then finally The New Day, before The New Day headed out to the ring. So I liked it. I thought it was different, a little longer than it needed to be. It went on for like 3 minutes, but I would do something like that more often, like big, either big show, not pay-per-views necessarily, but just like big episodes of Raw or SmackDown from time to time. I just think it helps get people revved up. Cesaro beat Big E with the neutralizer, so that's when he picked the table match stipulation for tonight. Asuka was Alexa Bliss's mystery guest on A Moment of Bliss, or A Moment of Place, I guess, as the Arabic Instagram told me. Sasha and Bayley walked out before Alexa could introduce Asuka. So when Asuka came out, she went after them. It led to a match. It was Asuka and Nikki Cross taking on Sasha and Bayley. The champions won. Bayley stacked up Nikki, used the ropes for leverage and got the pin. Braun Strowman just dismantled John Morrison with ease. Total squash. Poor Johnny. He's so much better than this. He is so much better than that. I don't care if he's the champion or not, so it's not a big deal. It's a big deal. He got squashed. He got squashed like a grape. Lacey Evans is a heel again for reasons that remain unexplained to me. But Lacey Evans is a heel. She pinned Naomi. And Naomi was trending. Naomi was trending for more than 24 hours on Twitter with the hashtag Naomi deserves better. And I saw that and I said to myself, you do realize that that's like an evergreen hashtag that you can plug like 10 different names in. Naomi is not the only one who deserves a hashtag trending that says that they deserve better in this company. She is not the only one. But like people were asking me like, so what do you think about this? What are your thoughts on Naomi and stuff? And here's my thoughts. I mean, it's very simple. Naomi is very talented. She's very athletic. So it's fun when she's in there and she just does the standing Rana. That's pretty cool. And she'll do some other things that are very flashy that I think are also fun. She's got a great entrance. You know, the glow-in-the-dark stuff and the club music. It's a fun entrance. She made a big return at the Royal Rumble, and she got a bigger reaction than I expected. The reaction that Naomi got in that Royal Rumble match surprised me. She had been off television for a while. I don't know why. I don't recall. It might have been injury stuff. I don't remember all the reasons. There were personal reasons. I think there was a health scare. Thankfully, she's okay, but she was gone for a while. And when she came out and made her entrance at the Rumble this year, she got a big reaction, and I think it even went viral. I think the video of her entrance went viral. And you would think that WWE loves that kind of stuff, right? They love going viral, and they didn't really follow it up, which was surprising. You know, I mean, I'm not saying just put strap her, you know, within a week, put the belt on her. But yeah, they didn't take full advantage of that. But I always thought, like, when she was the champion, and her whole thing is feel the glow. So, like, I think her entrance is cool. But then she would do promos, and she would use that line, and she would go, you're going to feel the glow. And I just... ugh, that's so lame. That is so super fucking lame. I wish that just she wouldn't... I know that's her gimmick and everything, but like when she says that, it's like, ugh. So I was not a fan of her like using that as her catchphrase or whatever you want to call it. I still think it's lame and shouldn't be used. Should they do more with her? Sure, but you can say that about a lot of people in that company. And right now, the SmackDown Women's Championship is with Bayley, and they're telling a story with Bayley and Sasha Banks. It is not Naomi. Naomi has no part of that story. Because some people were saying, oh, why isn't she challenging for the championship? Well, there's your answer. She should not be challenging for the championship because there's a better story going on right now that doesn't involve her. Now, should she be featured more prominently? Yes, I think she should. I think she should. Why, you know, Lacey Evans is all of a sudden a heel, and again, I don't know why. And so she beats Naomi, and Naomi has suffered a few losses on TV, and it's the Ruby Riott thing. Ruby Riott went 0-11 or 0-12 before she finally won a freaking match on TV this week. I feel the same way about Naomi that I feel about Ruby Riott. Ruby Riott is very talented. So is Naomi. Ruby Riott doesn't have a cool entrance like Naomi has. I'm not even sure she's as athletic. But Ruby Riott is another woman who works for that company who's also very talented, who also, I think, deserves to be featured more prominently and more strongly than she currently is. She's on TV every week. But what they've been doing with her, I think, has done her no favors. I would say the same thing about Naomi. I'll tell you, you know what Naomi deserves? I'll tell you what Naomi deserves. Naomi deserves to not be stuck doing silly karaoke contests. And I'll say that about all the women on the show. Not just Naomi. They deserve better than that. So let's do away with the karaoke bullshit and let them go in the ring and do their thing. And AJ Styles retained his Intercontinental title over Matt Riddle. Riddle suffers his first loss on SmackDown. But there's no shame in losing a competitive match with the champion. You know, I saw some of the replies under the WWE tweet about the finish of the match. He's buried. Matt Riddle is buried. These people are idiots. The most overused, misused, and abused word in the wrestling language, other than maybe the word mark, is the word buried. People don't understand what it means. They throw it around, and they have no idea what it means. This was a back-and-forth, competitive match. Riddle controlled a good part of it. He countered the calf crusher into the Bromission. Styles countered that, rolled Riddle up for the win, because they love their roll-ups. Styles put his hand out when the match was over. They shook hands. And then Baron Corbin jumped Matt Riddle from behind, laid him out with the End of Days. I was waiting for that. Styles kind of looked surprised. He looked like he was going to make a move to, like, stop Corbin, and then he thought better of it, like, oh, I'm a heel. And then he left. And then he walked away. But I thought the match was very good. I think Riddle's a star. Riddle is a star. You know, the problem is, barring a late addition to the show tonight, none of these three guys are scheduled, as I am sitting here recording this, to be on the pay-per-view. And they did nothing to get me more excited for Extreme Rules. So as a go-home show, I think SmackDown was a total failure. But they live and die by that TV money now, and not pay-per-view like the old days, so I guess in the end it doesn't really matter, I guess. But if you watch this show hoping to get excited for Extreme Rules, I mean, if you are more excited because of this show, then, hey, good for you. But to me, this was an abject failure as far as trying to get me interested in watching this pay-per-view. My new favorite pastime isn't so much reading about the ratings every Thursday when they come in for AEW and NXT. It's seeing people's reactions to the numbers and watching their heads explode if their home team didn't win. This tribalism that is just killing everything. It's not just wrestling, believe me. It just kills everything. I don't know why it exists. I don't know why people are just so tribal when it comes to these things. Unless you're drawing a paycheck from AEW or you're drawing a paycheck from NXT, it shouldn't matter. You shouldn't care that much if one side wins over the other. Who gives a shit? What are they, paying your bills? What do you care? It's a very interesting study in human behavior. At least I think these people are human. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced in some cases of that. I think the jury is still out. AEW scored a big win over NXT this week in the Nielsen numbers and did so against competition from both NASCAR and the UFC. Both shows were competing that night with NASCAR and UFC programming. AEW scored its best number since May 27th, which was the post Double or Nothing show. They averaged 788,000 overnight viewers on TNT for a Fight for the Fallen show headlined by Jon Moxley, successfully defending his AEW world title against Brian Cage. That's 10% higher than the previous week. That was up against NXT's 631,000. That is a big drop from the week before, a 17% drop from the winner-take-all match with Keith Lee against Adam Cole. NASCAR still ruled the roost. I mean, they had over 2 million viewers. That's more than what Raw does these days. UFC took a bit of a beating. They did a little over 500,000 viewers, so it looks like UFC was hurt by wrestling. Chris Jericho on Dynamite this week talked about the ratings. It's now part of his gimmick. He's calling himself the Demo God. And what did I say on my Dynamite stream that night? The show went off the air. I came on. And what was the first thing I said when I talked about Jericho's segment? I said, you watch, that's going to be a new t-shirt. He'll have that on a t-shirt. You, like, snap your fingers. He'll have a new t-shirt. And he did not disappoint, because the very next day, he had a new Demo God t-shirt available for purchase. This will be the next thing that he gets over. He's gotten a lot of things over in his career. He's gotten the word it over. He's gotten a plant over. He's gotten a scarf over. He's gotten a list over. Now he's going to get the demos. He's going to get the demos over. And when the numbers came in for this week's show, he was crowing about the demos on Twitter. And look, AEW absolutely smoked NXT in the 18 to 49 demo. They rolled up NXT like a big fat blunt and they smoked them. That's what they did. AEW is high as fuck right now off the fumes of NXT in the 18 to 49 demo. AEW was fifth on cable for the night. In those demos, NXT nearly fell out of the top 50. They came in at number 49. And look, if the demos are as important as we have all been led to believe that they are, USA Network cannot be very happy about those numbers. But the thing with USA does not have any other hit TV shows right now. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when USA Network actually had quite a few hit shows. I didn't watch any of them. I mean, I watched maybe like two episodes of Duckman back in the 90s, and that was about it. Remember Duckman, right? Or when Amit Zappa and his brother had that happy hour show that would come on after Monday Night Raw. I probably watched that once, maybe. But generally speaking, I am one of these wrestling fans who I watch wrestling and then I turn that network off. And I don't give a shit about any of the other programming they have on that channel. But USA had all these shows. They had Burn Notice and they had Monk and they had Mr. Robot and Suits and White Collar. And they used to have that show Pacific Blue. Remember Pac Blue? I think that ran for several seasons. You want to go back even earlier. You got Silk Stockings. If you've been watching Monday Night Raw from the very beginning, you remember the Murder, She Wrote lead-ins. Remember Vince McMahon? If you're looking for action, don't touch that dial. Up next, it's Monday Night Raw. I still have that burned in my brain as the piano music would play us out from Murder, She Wrote. But you also remember that Silk Stockings music, which is on Spotify, by the way. It is on Spotify. Yes, I did look up TV show theme songs once, and it was on there. It's pretty good music. But it would come on after Raw Monday nights. If you lived in a house and nobody else knew what you were watching, and that music started playing, they would think you were watching porn. What has happened to USA Network? They have nothing now. They have Monday Night Raw. Oof. And NXT. They have Monday Night Raw and NXT. They don't even have SmackDown anymore. But that's it. They have wrestling and that's it. Do they still have the dog show every year? I guess they have the dog show. I thought the dog show moved to CNBC. I don't even think they have the dog show anymore. The dog show is Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw is the dog show. But like, what other shows do they have that chart in the top 50? They have none. Not this week. NXT was it. Number 49. And then you look at TNT. And for all the people who cannot understand why TNT would be thrilled with a show that does 700,000 or 800,000 viewers every single week on Wednesday nights, take a look at that same chart, the demo chart from this week, and you will see that Dynamite was the only TNT show that charted in that top 50. It is the same reason that all of those Turner executives loved pro wrestling back in the 90s, or at least they tolerated. Maybe they didn't love pro wrestling, but they tolerated pro wrestling because it kept them high on the charts against their competition. Now, granted, the numbers back then were a lot higher than they are today. I mean, what would thrill TNT back in 1998 is going to be very different than what would thrill TNT in 2020. But that's why I can believe, yeah, you know what? They would be very happy with how AEW is doing. Some people couldn't believe it when I said that last week. How could they be happy? That's why. The lone TNT show to chart this week was AEW Dynamite. They took a chance on an unproven product, and it paid off for them. Why else would they sign them to a multi-year, million-dollar contract in January? Why? Because they like the color of Tony Khan's eyes. They like his curly hair. He's a nice guy. You think that's why they gave them a contract worth something like $45 million? Because he's a nice guy? Wake up! Wake up. You know, part of the problem that NXT now faces, and I thought NXT this week was very good, and they're clearly trying to build for the future, but I think part of the problem that they face is that they gave away the biggest possible match they could do at the Great American Bash. They hot-shotted a winner-take-all champion versus champion match, and it did well, and it's like, well, now what? They did another one this week. They had another winner-take-all match for both belts, and it didn't do as well. That's the question that they're going to have to answer going forward. Now what do you do? All you can do is just keep building up your roster and then hope that the new stars take hold and people want to watch the new stars and that they catch on. And this has been always the issue with NXT. As people get called up and plucked away to go to Raw and SmackDown, Triple H has had to rebuild. He's had to bring new faces in or take some of the existing faces and then really push them and give people a reason to want to see them. And it looks like they're going hard on Keith Lee and they're going hard on Dexter Lumis. And we'll see if it all works out in the end, but that's the issue that NXT now faces. I'm not going to get really into the Dynamite stuff. You want my thoughts on Vicky Guerrero being revealed as Nyla Rose's new manager and Kenny Omega showing his darker side and all that. I got into it on Wednesday night. Moxley is still the AEW champion. Darby Allin did return. Oddly, they didn't have him interfere for the finish, which I thought was weird. But the story is that Cage thought about firing Taz because Taz threw the towel in. And he thought about firing him, and he still might. He said that he's going to take the weekend and think more about it. And he says, regardless, I never tapped. I was never going to tap. And even though I may no longer be undefeated, he says, I remain unbeaten. So there is a difference between being undefeated and being unbeaten, and that is the story that they are going with Brian Cage. This Wednesday, Cody defends the TNT title. I said, watch, you know, Matt Cardona. Watch for that name. He'll be popping up soon, I guarantee it. Hangman Page takes on five of the Dark Order. Evil Lise is getting a shot with AEW. That's a very interesting potential signing. She'll take on former Impact Wrestling star Diamante. Falls Count Anywhere, the Young Bucks against the Butcher and the Blade. And Chris Jericho tags with Jake Hager against Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. And they are pushing ahead with a rematch soon with Chris Jericho against Orange Cassidy. As for NXT this week, it was a show highlighted by what I thought were two really good title matches. We had Keith Lee out for a promo, and he gave thanks to his late trainer, Tim Brooks, Killer Tim Brooks, who just passed away, actually, I think before Keith Lee won the championship. So, unfortunately, he just missed that, and he gave thanks to him, and he called out Dominik Dijakovic, his frenemy, and ended up giving him a championship match on this show. He says, I'm going to defend both these belts against you. So we got ourselves another winner-take-all match 2 weeks in a row. Damian Priest, or is it Damian Breast, I guess, defeated Cameron Grimes. Indy Hartwell, we haven't seen her in a while. She's done a couple of jobs on TV. Indy Hartwell is somebody who has been under contract for a little while with the company. She was kind of a hot commodity, I guess, on the indie scene before they, well, that's her first name, right? Before they brought her in, she's the one I mentioned a few weeks ago who said that Sasha versus Bayley in Brooklyn at that TakeOver show was the match that got her to go to wrestling school. It's the match that inspired her to want to become a pro wrestler. So she got a win over Shotzi Blackheart after Robert Stone and Aaliyah interfered. Aaliyah knocked Shotzi off the top rope, actually. She took a hard bump to the mat. Indy with a big boot. Gets the win. Winner take all, Dijakovic and Keith Lee. Not one of their best matches, but still very good. Still very good. Dijakovic went for a flying axe handle, but as he came down, Keith Lee caught him with those big bear paws, hit a choke slam, and then hit the BBC, the Big Bang Catastrophe, to retain both the NXT title and the North American title. So they embraced, they were hugging when the match was over, and all of a sudden the lights went out. We saw Scarlett Bordeaux made an appearance. She came down to the ring, emptied a sack that had the broken pieces of that hourglass that Keith Lee, I think, stepped on, or whatever he did to it a few weeks ago. And so there it is, the big first tease of Karrion Kross being next in line to challenge for the championship. There was a backstage brawl backstage a little bit later on with Dijakovic and Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross laid him out and then walked off. So we're going to get that match on TV this week. Timothy Thatcher against Denzel DeJournette. Is that it? DeJournette, I think, is how you pronounce it. DeJournette has the headgear. He's got like that amateur wrestling gear on. And clearly he's got an amateur wrestling background. And I mean, this was just, this really was the one match on the show that felt like a real match. It felt like a real battle here between these two. A lot of chain wrestling. And eventually Thatcher got the crab, half crab, and DeJournette tapped out. He wouldn't let go. And so out came Oney Lorcan, which is good. That means we're going to get another Oney Lorcan-Timothy Thatcher match. Maybe eventually we'll build to another one of these fight pit matches between the two of them. They did a segment in the back, Robert Stone. He was pleading his case to Killian Dane. I didn't mean to do it last week when I threw my coffee behind me and it landed on you. You were in the wrong place at the wrong time. I didn't mean it. And then Aaliyah comes over and she's got a drawing. She's got an illustration from Dexter Loomis. And I guess he was kind of recreating the scene from last week, and this offended Killian Dane, and Killian Dane wants a match with him, and I don't know. So I guess we're going to get Dexter Loomis against Killian Dane on TV this week. Tegan Nox challenging Io Shirai for the NXT Women's Championship. This is the best Tegan Nox match yet in her NXT career. There was a moment where they were outside the ring and in came Io, and Tegan moved out of the way. She was kind of sitting up against the ring steps. And Io ran both of her knees first, into the steel steps. So that kind of played into the match a little bit later. She had hit a backbreaker to Tegan across her knee, and then she was selling it like her knees were still hurting her. So that kind of played into things. But we had Tegan hitting she hit the molly-go-round off the top rope. Tegan is a huge Molly Holly fan. She has practically begged for a match against Molly Holly. We saw Molly Holly in the Women's Rumble. I don't know if Molly Holly is going to want to come in and work in the middle of a pandemic, but that could be a match they do on TV one week, unless they wanted to do it at a takeover. I don't think Molly Holly has any name value whatsoever with the casual audience, but there's probably wrestling fans who remember her, and I'm just saying it could be, if it's a match that Tegan really wants, and Molly is game, do it on TV one week. Molly Holly comes to NXT, and she puts over Tegan Nox. Why not? Doesn't hurt anybody. I like Molly, so why not? But she hit the Molly go-round for a near fall, and Io caught her with this palm strike that Tegan just sold perfectly. Like she got shot and it fell backwards. And Io hit the moonsault. Io, she missed most of it. I've not been really impressed by some of these moonsaults of late that she's hit where she just kind of misses almost completely. I love her moonsault, but you gotta call a spade a spade. If I'm gonna criticize Charlotte Flair for landing on her feet, you know, when you hit the moonsault, you've got to have that person positioned where they need to be. It's like when Jeff Hardy, sometimes he used to hit the Swanton Bomb. He would barely clip his opponents. And I'm just watching this and I'm like, am I supposed to believe that this person is downed from a move like that? Come on. Come on. You got to do better than that. But anyway, she won with the moonsault. Io Shirai remains the champion. She got attacked by Dakota Kai when the match was over, and so that will be the next challenger, I guess, in line for the NXT Women's Championship. It will be Dakota Kai. I thought it was a very good show. Didn't do well ratings-wise, but I thought it was a very good show. And finally, I wanted to mention this. For those who don't know, Bret Hart recently launched a new series on his website called Confessions of the Hitman, which sounds like someone who turned rat against a mob boss. Season 1 is available now, 35 episodes for $35 Canadian. I think that works out to be $25 US. Plus, I guess there's new episodes that drop every week. And it's a series talking about his childhood, talking about his career, life after wrestling, and then, of course, he gets into current events as well. On the latest episode, he explained how he rates his personal rating system for wrestlers, what he thinks makes a good wrestler, including in-ring ability, mic skill, looks. And he scores each category on a scale of 1 to 10. Hat tip to Wrestling Inc., by the way, for some of the write-up of what he talked about here. Because I was not even aware that he was doing this. But Bret rated himself this week against Hulk Hogan. And the results were very interesting. Hogan, he said, had an unbelievable look. He would give Hogan a 9 out of 10. Maybe even a 10 out of 10. That's how good of a look he said that Hogan had as a professional wrestler. I guess, hairline aside. I think Hogan was probably balding out of the womb. But he would give Hogan a 10 out of 10 on promo ability. But on his in-ring skills, he would give Hogan a 2 out of 10. So according to Bret's personal ratings scale, he would rate Hulk Hogan, he would grade Hulk Hogan as a talent with a score of 22 out of 30. Now, I don't know if Bret ever saw Hogan work in Japan. I would imagine he did because he was probably on some of those same shows, you know, where Hogan worked. Like in 1990, they did some kind of joint show, I think with SWS it was called. I don't know if Hogan was on that show or not, but maybe he never did. Maybe he never saw Hogan work, in Japan. I think you got to give Hogan a little more credit than that as an in-ring worker. The thing with Hogan is he knew his audience. He knew what he had to do and what he didn't have to do, at least here in this country. Like in the States, he wrestled a certain style and he got away with it. As long as he delivered the Hulk up, right? The big comeback, the big boot, the leg drop, and then he posed. That's all he had to do. In Japan, he had his working boots on. No leg drop. He used to finish guys with the Axe Bomber. I mean, Bret is my all-time favorite. Hogan was when I was a kid. But Bret's my all-time favorite. I respect his scale. My own personal scale, I would probably go 5 out of 10. For Hogan in the ring, just because I've seen what he is capable of, and I think a lot of people would be shocked if they saw what Hogan could do. And I also think Hogan was a great seller. I think Hulk Hogan was a great seller, and I think that even though I absolutely hated it when he would no-sell someone's finishing move, he did it to Randy Savage, where he would just, pop right back up after three elbows. He did it to The Undertaker at Survivor Series when he just got right back up after that first tombstone. Not the second one. That was the one where after he told somebody to go get his wife and kids on the phone, I guess because he thought that this could be the end. But, I mean, he did it to Flair. He did it to Vader in WCW. He no-sold the powerbomb, which was ridiculous. I hated that. Hated that. But, especially in his prime years, the heel would get heat on Hogan and he would sell his ass off. Like he did with Andre at Mania. I mean, obviously he wasn't going to piss off Andre, but I think he deserves credit for his selling as well, and that would be part of your in-ring ability. Bret too. Bret Hart was an incredible seller. He sold a beating like he was really getting his ass kicked. You really felt like this guy was getting his ass kicked when you watched a lot of his matches. But 22 out of 30 is not a bad score for Hulk. Now, grading himself. This is where it gets interesting. On look, Brett admitted that he didn't have the kind of build that Hogan had, but he would give himself a solid 7 out of 10 on look. He says he doesn't think he had a bad look. He thought he was pretty fit. He was pretty strong. He says he had a decent gimmick. Then we get to the talking aspect, and he admits that that was his weakest attribute. He says, I did get a lot better. I had some great mic moments in my career. I mean, even in WCW, for God's sake. Who can forget El Dandy? The promo with Mean Gene, come on. The promo with Mean Gene Okerlund in the back on Thunder or whatever show it was. And he's talking about, you know, the cruiserweights. He's talking about El Dandy. You're a great wrestler. And Gene Okerlund's like, El Dandy is in the cruiserweight division. He goes, who are you to doubt El Dandy? He's a great wrestler. He's got great technical prowess. Oh my God. I point to certain promos whenever somebody tries to argue that Bret Hart was a terrible promo, and I say, you are a terrible wrestling fan, because you clearly missed a lot of really good stuff back in the day. You clearly missed all of 1997, and you clearly missed some of those gems from Bret's run, the only redeeming things he really ever did in WCW. I cannot take you seriously if you believe that Bret Hart was like an awful promo. He was not a great promo, but he was not an awful promo. And then the third category, can this guy wrestle? He says on that, he would give himself a 9. I could wrestle anybody, any shape. You could put me in there with big guys. I could wrestle Andre. I could wrestle Roddy Piper. I could have a great match with just about anybody, which is true. So then let's add all of that up. 7 out of 10 on look. Let's go 5 out of 10 on the mic, since I think he said he would give himself a 4 or a 5. We'll say 5. And 9 out of 10 for in-ring ability. So Bret Hart would grade himself a 21 out of 30. But he would grade Hogan a 22 out of 30. So he actually graded Hogan 1 point higher than himself. Now look, nobody can debate the fact that Hogan was a far bigger star than Bret Hart was. And his place in the business was more influential. Hulk Hogan is one of the biggest stars of all time, ever. He's on Mount Rushmore. You don't have to like the guy, but he's on Mount Rushmore. If Bret added a grade for star power, Hogan would win 10 out of 10. That cannot even be debated. But just grading it on the three criteria that Bret uses, I never thought that he would grade Hogan higher than himself. But there it is. An interesting debate for sure. Everybody will have their own criteria for how they rate different wrestlers. There's really no right or wrong answer. But just hearing that come from Bret himself, I thought, was very interesting. If you have questions for the mailbag, which I do not have time for, I have a RSPW Rewind is on tap for next week. I promise you it's all queued up, but we had a lot of stuff to get into this week. Keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter @solemonster because I will be live tweeting during the pay-per-view tonight, and I will be live on YouTube. As soon as Extreme Rules or Extreme Roles goes off the air tonight, I will be live on YouTube. And not only am I going to be recapping all of the matches and all of the events and all of the goings on tonight and eyeballs being plucked out and Swamp Thing and everything going on, I'm giving away 6 championship belts and you still have a few hours to enter the contest. $1 is all it takes to enter. Go to WrestleRumble.com and I'm going to be having the live drawing, the live random drawing for all 3 winners on the stream tonight on YouTube. All right, guys. That's all I got for you. I think I lost 5 pounds doing this show. We are in the middle of a heat wave here in New York. I believe right now it is 93 degrees outside with a real feel of around 100. But I turned the air off. It's one of those days I wish I had central air. I'll be back with you for episode 662. That is coming up next Sunday. And as I said, live tonight on YouTube, live again Wednesday night for the AEW Dynamite stream. Come on down and join us. We always have a good time. Take phone calls at the end. That could be good. That could be very bad. But it's always entertaining. And I aim to entertain. Be well. Stay safe. I'll see you tonight for the Extreme Rules recap. And I will see you back here for 662 next Sunday, as we do each and every weekend. Until then, Take care, guys.
The Salah Monster sounds off.
I mean, it's similar to the Jeff Jarrett situation. He dropped the championship and then he burned a bridge for many, many years. That's why when WCW went under, Vince McMahon went on television and specifically singled his name out as somebody they would never hire. And now, all these years later, he's back with the company. What we've learned over the years is whether it's Jeff Jarrett or the Ultimate Warrior or Bret Hart or Bruno Sammartino, eventually they always come back home.
The Salah Monster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/TheSalahMonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Salah Monster on Twitter, @SalahMonster.
Salah Monster.
Put that cigarette out.
Salah Monster Sounds Off.